The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 558, recorded on December 30th, 2019.
Welcome to the 558th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 391st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Dinser.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yep. As you can tell by the date, it's December 30th. It's not New Year's Eve. I couldn't ask you to do this on New Year's Eve, especially at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing something more important than this.
Yeah.
You know, we're starting to come up on the 400th episode of Video Game Roundtable. That's surreal to me. I don't know how many episodes you guys have been on, but I've been on every single one.
I think it's probably been close to 100 for me by now.
I think more like 150, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy for me to check. All I do have to do is go to Podbean and just click on you as the... The way I do it on Podbean is all the tags are just the people who actually worked on that episode.
Okay.
People like Hillary Goldstein is one episode. I know Paul worked like well over 200 of them. So, anyways, we're going to talk about the year in games we've played. Rather than doing the promised best games and awards and all that stuff, just more of a free-flowing episode. You know, there's not much news, and the news that's out there is kind of boring, so because everybody's just giving their game of the year lists and also games of the decade lists. I don't know if I'm ready to talk about what my best game of the decade is. That's the assignment for next week, everybody. That's the question of the week. What do you think was the best game between 2010 and 2019? So... you don't have to answer that now. I'd probably say something and say, oh, wait, but this also came out. Oh, wait, but this also came out. So, but yeah, I mean, so here's a question for you. How have the games been this year as a whole for you? TJ? TJ?
Uh-oh.
TJ, did we lose you?
Looks like he's still there. I think he just went mute for a second. I hope that's all it is.
Okay, Scott, how's this year in games been for you as a whole?
It's been very good, especially on the Switch. I feel like this has been the year of the Switch. Having Link's Awakening, the...
Well, let's not go into specific games.
Okay, sorry. But for me, it's been a lot of the Switch, and there's been some good PC games as well. And I've just been just enjoying having the Switch games that came out. I haven't really played, like I said, I don't have an Xbox, so I haven't played that. And I think I haven't really played too much PlayStation. So, yeah, it's been primarily the Switch and PC for me.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, here's the thing about the Switch this year. There's a lot of games that came out for the Switch, which I did not realize. Did you know that Divinity Original Sin 2 came out on the Switch?
Yes. A lot of isometric RPGs came to the Switch this year, which is just crazy. But they're on that platform now, and you can get, like I said, Neverwinter's Night, Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale, and Divinity Original Sin is also on there. So there's just a whole plethora of games on the Switch platform.
Yeah, I mean, this is also the year that a lot of Microsoft games come out to the Switch. Cuphead, Ori and the Blind Forest...
Ori's on there.
And it's, you know, and the thing is that a lot of Switch owners are probably thinking about the next Ori game, and they say, well, it's probably going to come here, too.
I think so. That's a good bet at this point.
So, let's talk about the Switch games this year. For example, I don't know if it's your favorite game, but I know that you were obsessed with Dragon Quest XI.
Yes, that was a really fun game, and I played it on the PC, and from what I've seen, it's a totally new game on the Switch. You have additional scenes for each of the characters, or not additional scenes, but like an additional quest, side story quest, just for each character. And then,
by the way, for those you don't know, the original Dragon Quest XI came out 2 years ago, but they had a definitive edition come out on the Switch.
Right, and the definitive edition also includes the ability to have 2D version of it, which plays really great on the Switch, and it's basically, it's like they remade the game two times, you know? And yeah, and then there's an option where the NPCs can lie to you about where things are, which would really change the experience of the game, because then you'd have to have this, you take it for granted that these people are telling you the truth, and now you have these people that might mislead you on purpose, and so that changes, I think, the atmosphere of the game. And it's very well worth getting, I think, even if you've gotten the Steam version, to have this definitive edition where you can have the additional game story for each of the characters. You could, you know, try the 2D version out, see how that, you know, feels.
Did you you also I know you played a lot of Luigi's Mansion recent. That's a game that just came out.
Yes. It came out October 30th or 31st.
31st, yeah. Again, I question, why the hell did they release it on Halloween itself? Maybe do it a week before Halloween. It's like, you know, it's like give you a chance to savor Halloween before. But no, it's like one day later, it's November 1st, so who cares?
Yeah, that was a little weird. Maybe October 1st would have been even better. Then you could spend a whole month playing the game. And I played a lot of Luigi Mansion 3. I got a lot of the gems, not all of them, but most of them so far on each floor. I'm stuck on the boiler level, basement 2, because of Clem, and that boss battle is really a pain in the butt. And
so you're still playing it. Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of people are having trouble with that boss because it's very difficult to maneuver yourself on this little rubber ducky thing and push the boss into spikes. And this is kind of a weird boss battle because he's really lazy about trying to take you out. He throws these bombs out, but then he just takes a nap on his ducky while you're running around the ring or trying to push the bomb away. And he's just really a lazy boss, but it's really frustrating because you end up doing more damage to yourself trying to avoid the wall, and it's very difficult.
So you'd say it's like kind of a tedious, long boss fight?
A little bit, yeah, because you gotta time everything, and that's right. And then when you get his duck thing to pop, he shoots out onto the other side, outside the ring. So you have to get out of the ring, run to where he is, flash him, then suck him in. And you can't use Luigi to be on the outside because he can't suck in the bosses. You have to do it, or Luigi has to do it.
So dirty.
Oh, it is.
It sounds so dirty. You have to suck in the bosses.
Oh yeah, I know. There's that joke. Yes, I know. It's like it's low hanging fruit is right there. No, use blow, not suck. Or suck, not blow. It's terrible.
A lot of games that came out on Switch just shocked me. I mean, I did not think that something like Alien Isolation would come out on Switch.
Yeah, that was a shot. That was a nice little end of the year surprise, yeah. And it plays well. It looks really nice on there, and it should. I mean, it's kind of what it came out in 2016. They've had plenty of time to play around with it and
optimize.
And actually, the group that put out Alien Isolation has been in charge of quite a few good Switch ports. I'm trying to see who they are right now, but they have worked on. I think they also worked on getting Rocket League to Switch. And
I see Blaze Blue is on the Switch.
Yeah, that was in February. Did you play that Blaze Blue?
I didn't play the Switch version, no. I cannot even fathom the idea of trying to handle a Switch controller for a fighting game. It sounds no fun. I love the Switch, but I would not use it for a fighting game.
The Pro controllers probably work well.
I'm willing to bet you that they probably have a hoary stick for fighting games for the Switch. They have to. They have to have a hoary stick. It's a special, you know, a special peripheral for fighting games. I mean, Xbox does it, PlayStation does it. I don't see why not the Switch.
Scott's probably right too. The Pro controller probably works pretty well for it.
There's also a bunch of games that are on Switch, which are on other systems. We might as well talk about it, because 2019 was the rise of the Apple TV games, and a lot of them have been getting, you have Untitled Goose Game, you have, what was the name of that other game? The other big one. Untitled Goose Game, and I'm stumbling now. Maybe you can say it. I'm trying to remember what it is.
It's another indie?
Yeah, from Apple. The Apple, you had...
Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Yeah, but there's another one that I'm trying to remember that was on Apple, and it just got say what you want about the Apple games, they really have hit the sweet spot in terms of being an indie game that's almost like 2019 Atari 2600, because a lot of the 2600 games would take one gameplay mechanic and make an entire gameplay around it. While these games do the same thing, like Untitled Goose Game. Was it the thing of Untitled Goose Game? Well, you're a goose and you have to do certain, complete tasks using your equipment as a goose.
Yeah. Goose Game and Sayonara Wild Hearts are the two that I know of that were like huge on Apple Arcade, and they've been huge everywhere else.
Although I've been playing Ape Out on Windows 10, and that was another game, which was your typical Devolver Digital game, very minimalistic, but bloody and fun. Have you played Ape Out?
Yes.
Okay. For those who don't know, you play an ape who's escaping, and there are these. It's a top-down game too, and there's these guys who are trying to shoot you, and you just grab them and throw them against the wall. And make them splatter. There are some who have bombs strapped to them, so you have to be careful with them, and you have to make sure you're not in the line of fire. So it's very fun. But the part about it that people and I didn't notice it, because whenever I saw them playing it at E3 and Devolver Digital's parking lot, they didn't have the sound on. The game has this really neat jazz percussion that goes on, ding, 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 ding. And it isn't quite tied to your gameplay, but it has a little bit of reactiveness. But it isn't, whenever you kill someone, it does the cymbal crash.
Yeah, it gives you a nice little sting. I love it. It's dynamic enough to fit. And stay with you throughout the escape. So it's like, it's really funny. Just like when you punch somebody so hard they explode into pieces against a wall, you just get that sort of that horn sting or that cymbal crash.
Yeah. Oh, the other Microsoft game that came out on Switch was Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. I forgot about that. I played it, and. I don't know what to think of it. It's twee beyond belief. It's not a new game, obviously, but I finally got to play it because it was on Gold. Did either of you get around to playing the remaster of Final Fantasy VII?
No.
Okay. It was released on Switch earlier this year. I don't know if it was remastered. I think it was just the base game.
Yeah.
They smoothed some textures a little bit and put like some fast forward features on there.
I've been playing. I also played Link's Awakening and Cadence of Hyrule, two Zelda games, which were really good on the Switch.
Yeah, let's talk about Cadence of Hyrule. We talked about this earlier in the year. For those who don't know, it's basically the Necrodancer. As a matter of fact, the official name of it is Cadence of Hyrule, Crypt of the Necrodancer, featuring the Legend of Zelda. So they don't even make it. They don't even pretend it's not a crossover. It is a crossover.
Yeah, she's crossing into their world, and it's I guess her villain came with her, and they have to move to the beat of the music, just like you do in Necrodancer.
That's the main thing of the game, is that everything is, you have to learn the beat, or else you're gonna get roguelike, so you can understand that once you die, that's it. Okay, start over from the beginning.
They do give you the option. Well, no, you don't quite start over from the beginning. I think you keep your diamonds, and then you can buy stuff in the, I guess, Afterworld shop. And you lose you lose some items, but not everything. You don't lose the story stuff. You just lose the little power-up stuff, and then you keep your diamonds to
by those power-ups if you've lost them, like the shovel and the other stuff. You do get to play as Zelda or Link or Cadence, so you can rotate them out, or you can play multiplayer with your friends, which I think is actually harder, because then you have to coordinate with each other, because, you know, if someone just doesn't go by the beat and they're just moving, you'll end up getting clobbered. But there is the nice feature of turning off the beat, or at least turning it off the requirement to go by the beat, so that way you have a little bit more freeform ability if you're not good at keeping the beat.
So
Came out with a little surprise DLC near the end of this year. They added a fourth character, the Octavo, the villain of the game, who has his own abilities and stuff, and that was completely free, and it's just like you can go on a whole new quest with him, and he has his own story and everything, so that was really kind of cool that they just like came out and said the game's done well enough, here's some fun little DLC, just go ahead and have it.
And Cadence may be crossing over into other games, because they kind of left the ending open-ended.
They said that it was very successful, Cadence of Hyrule, so you can bet that they're going to start looking at other, IPs. You know, there are some games that are sort of like Monopoly, in which they just have so many versions of the game with different licensed properties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this works very well for Cadence and Zelda, and it's very enjoyable. The music is really catchy and just kind of sticks with you, and it's really just kind of fun battling with the beat of music.
So here's a question for you. This one was released multi-platform this year, but did any of you play Ukulele in the Impossible Lair?
No,
otherwise known as Donkey Kong Country Redux.
I didn't get around to it either. I heard a lot of good things from my colleagues. I heard it was much, much better than the first one because...
One of them is Banjo-Kazooie, and this one is Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, I've heard it's a very different game. Yeah, but I've heard it's...
What's it called? Platformer. In the mold of Donkey Kong Country / Oh, damn. What was that name of that Ubisoft game? I can't forget. I forgot the name of it. You know, the Ubisoft platformer.
Not sure on that one.
Rayman.
Okay, I was gonna say Rayman.
Yeah, it was Rayman. So yeah, that's a game that got, you know. And here's the thing, you know, Ukulele was not bad, you know, but it was very workmanlike. Let's just say it felt like I don't know. I mean, it was a Kickstarter project. I don't want to say it felt like an obligation, but it felt like an obligation. It felt like they said, we're going to do this really cool thing, and when they started doing it, it's like, oh, well, you know what? We're not as into it as we thought we would be. You know what I mean? It just didn't feel like there was the love that you feel for certain games. And Ukulele and the Impossible Lair looks like, no, they really wanted to do this one. This is what they should have thought to themselves, you know, we should have done our own version of Donkey Kong Country before we did something like Banjo-Kazooie. Because the graphics are much better.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you're not. It's 2D, 3D, you know. But even so, you know, it looks a lot better. It's a lot more colorful.
I thought the first game was pretty clean and colorful. It kind of looked like everything was.
It felt strange. You know, it was quote unquote colorful, but it just felt flat to me.
To me, it looked like everything was kind of made of clay, and that was sort of an aesthetic that was a little bit pleasing. My issues with the game were not in its visuals.
Issues is that you had to write a game guide and you got bored of it. That's what happened to you.
It was very, very grind. Well, like, yeah, when you have to collect all the collectibles, it's very grindy. But and that's why I didn't play the second one. Although I should probably go back and give it a chance
They're
at some
both
point.
Very different games. One is Banjo-Kazooie. The other one is, I will say this. You know what? It's time. It's time for a full-on remaster of Conker again. I know they did it for the Xbox 360, but I mean, do it again, except this time really go all out. The remaster, I think, was Conker Live and Reloaded. Don't tell me neither of you remember Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Yes, yeah. I remember it. I just didn't play it.
And everybody does it, plays it just for one thing, and that's the singing poo. I mean, there are some people who just memorize all the lyrics to that song. Yep, TJ muted his microphone again.
So I guess he's busy. That's just not my kind of game. I like Ratchet. It's just not. I like Jak and Daxter. I like Ratchet and Clank. Those were fun. And I think Conker's Bad Fur Day, that was on Nintendo 64. So I just didn't get around to that game. It's like Earthworm Jim. It's just gross. I don't really feel like playing that game. It's just not for me.
Really?
Yeah, I just...
Come on, who doesn't like the Great Mighty Pooh?
Yeah, I guess I don't, but that's alright, to each their own, right?
I am the Great Mighty Pooh, and I'm going to throw my shit at you. Huge splice, a supply of tish comes from a chocolate starfish. Come on.
No.
I will say, though, Conker's Bad Fur Day does have the most depressing ending.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. What, isn't he like an alcoholic or something?
No. Okay, spoiler for a game that's 20 years old. At the end, Conker becomes king, if I remember correctly, but his girlfriend is dead, so he's just sitting there morosely on the throne feeling like shit. Because he won, but he didn't really win.
That does sound sad.
The thing is, Conker was supposed to be one of those cutesy games like Ukulele, and they decided, you know what, this is boring. Let's just make him foul-mouthed and just go heavy on the gross-out humor.
Right. There are people that like that. I mean, there's definitely a audience for them. I know people that, you know, love Ren and Stimpy would probably love that game. So, you know, it's not surprising.
So, let's talk about the PlayStation 4 now. Without TJ here, it's gonna, because he played all of it, and we're gonna have to listen to him gush on and on and on about Resident Evil 2.
Well, I figure Sekiro would be another one.
Yeah, there was a lot of good ones that I really enjoyed on PS4 this year. High among them were Sekiro, Resident Evil 2, Iceborne is good. Monster Hunter World Iceborne.
Let's talk about Dragon Quest Builders 2, because that was multi-platform.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I know
that was it. I completed that game.
Really?
And I played it on... Yes, I
How
played
long
it on the
was
Switch.
It
was long. I take my time, but for me, it was well over 40 hours, maybe 60. Or something like that. Because again, this is a building game, so you could take your time building stuff. And once you get past the story, you can build anywhere in the story world that you want to. And you can bring your friends, your characters along, which is something that's that I feel was an improvement over the first game. Because first game, you couldn't bring these characters from the story to your building place. They were just, you know, locked in the chapter, and so it felt very isolated. In part two, it feels like a real world, and you can sail to that island or that continent and grab your friends and then sail back, and or wherever you could all, you know, build on whatever island you want with whatever characters you want from the different places. And because you built a story with them, so it's kind of nice to have them there with you.
TJ went mute again, so we're going to have to bash Resident Evil 2 and just say how bad.
I'm here. I'm
it
just...
Sucked. It sucked. It sucks so bad. So, here, TJ. I know we talked about Resident Evil 2 at length earlier in the year, but now that you have... Jeez, it came out in January, too. Now that you have some distance from it, what do you think about Resident Evil 2 made it such a good game for you?
I think a huge part of it is like the sound design. When you're in the fucking police station, it's ridiculously tense. Just like listening to the hallways and hearing like certain, like wondering if a certain groan or if a certain sound is in the hall with you or if it's something in another room.
And then when you get to the point where Mr. X shows up, you constantly hear his footsteps in the police station, and it makes everything so much more tense because you're like wondering to yourself, is he a room away? Is he on the other side of the – and it's like the sound design in that game is incredible, and the fact that it didn't win
about the friggin' game awards.
I do in that particular case because I thought it was the dumbest thing ever that Call of Duty Modern Warfare won it when Resident Evil 2 had such an incredible atmosphere to it. Like, that was – like, it literally makes a huge part of, like, the tension and the fear in the game, and I think that's incredible. Outside of that, like, Resident Evil 2, it was just one of the most – it was beautiful. It was – like, when you're out in the rain, it had one of the best water effects in any game I've seen in a long time. And when your character comes in, they, like, actually brush themselves off a bit. It's just those little subtle animations, those subtle contextual animations that, like, make the whole thing feel like a living experience. And it did, for a horror game to be that good, I think it's incredible what Resident Evil 2 did, and I'm really excited for Resident Evil 3.
You know, I'm just going to have to – next time I play Resident Evil 2, I'm just going to play it with a mind of don't shoot anything unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
I think that's – because I got into a position in which the game was unplayable for me because there was no way for me to get out of a situation in which I really did need bullets and I didn't have any.
Yeah, like the people that I've seen doing like speedruns and stuff, they actually don't go for headshots as much as you might think. They go for leg shots because it's easier to run around. Yeah, because it's easier to get around a zombie that falls down.
So let's talk about Sekiro.
Sekiro is so odd because everybody I think From Software has done this thing where they have built such a legacy with Dark Souls games that I kind of feel like they've backed themselves into a corner on what people expect out of a From Software game.
Yeah, you said this earlier that people are expecting Dark Souls and they get Tenchu instead.
Yeah, and it's just like...
I feel like story-wise it was very Dark Souls because it had a very grim story. You had to choose between two sides with really real consequences of letting certain characters down if you went one way versus another way. So to me, that felt very Dark Souls.
It did have a lot of Dark Souls like elements in it, like the checkpoint system. You have like all of the seamless traversal between environments. And then of course you have the big boss battles and all that jazz. But like, between the lines, like, whenever you're, like, traveling through the world, it's very, very, very Tenchu. The verticality, the grappling hook, the gadgets, the stealth, it's all very, like, not Dark Souls. And I think that's kind of – the duality of it is that it's a game that's not being Dark Souls, but unfortunately, like – does Dark Souls things that, like, I think sets up the expectation.
So stealth is really the big difference, because in Dark Souls you don't need to do stealth. You just go slam into things. But in Sekiro, you need stealth. You need to be an assassin. You need to be able to dodge and get the drop on a lot of these enemies, whereas in Dark Souls you can just kind of charge in.
Because you can get overwhelmed in Dark Souls, but like if you get overwhelmed in Sekiro, it's very, very easy to just like get killed fast, and it's like you have these options of escape at any given time, and it clearly wants you to use them. You have these gadgets that allow you to like break space from enemies, break their stances, and then like a grappling hook that can literally whip you up onto a roof way away from them, or you can sort of regroup yourself, get healed, and reconsider your strategy.
Right.
You know what I just realized? The success of Dark Souls has reinvigorated the Castlevania, the Metroidvania type of game, because this past year we had two of them. There was one was Bloodstained, Ritual of the Night, and the other one was Blasphemous, and both of them, you know, were hits as far as indie games that were Kickstarter goes. And they both, I think both of those games were more inspired by Dark Souls than they were for with Symphony of the Night.
Yeah. Blasphemous is so, like,
dark.
It's incredibly dark.
It's so ugly. And it's,
yeah. Well, here's the thing, no.
But it's like,
let's qualify this
so.
For a second. When we say it looks ugly, we don't mean the graphics are ugly.
It's,
you know,
it's beautifully
a beautiful
ugly.
Game, but it is ugly.
Your main character has a helmet that he, like, digs, like, he drills it in. I'm not sure. I can't even, like, it's like he puts an Iron Maiden helmet onto his head, and there's, like, a trailer where he pushes it down, like, blood spurts out, and he just runs around with this thing on his head. It's like,
yeah.
Whoa!
It's called Catholic Guilt Game.
I guess.
Because the entire game is about being Spanish and Catholic and being incredibly guilty, and the best thing that could happen to you is that you're killed. At least all these people that are on spikes, they just want to die.
Yeah, it's a very intentionally ugly game in the way of, like, it is so dark, it is so gruesome.
There's a giant crying baby boss at one point, you know, it's just like, oh my god, this game.
Well, you know what? It just you know, maybe it's Castlevania who got stolen by the Binding of Isaac.
it's very grim.
Isaac in a long while. I'll have to play that sometime.
Yeah, it is very Castlevania, cause, or at least Symphony of the Night in a way, because you get all these I think artifacts and runes, and you can augment your abilities and how you attack enemies. So there is an RPG element there, and yeah, it's just because they're really dark. So.
I do want to go back and say that Sekiro also supplied one of my favorite set piece moments of the entire year.
Okay.
There's a fight where you basically go into a burning shrine, and you fight against this old lady this old lady ninja who uses illusion, and the music is gorgeous, the fight is intense, and the shrine continues to, like, increasingly burn as the fight goes on, and it's just like one of the most standout boss battles I've ever I've fought in a long, long time. Madame Butterfly is the fight, and it's just like I would recommend just like going out and just watching someone play that fight, or even just like listening to the theme of the fight, because it's so good. It's all so good. The visuals in that game are also like what put it over the top for me, because you like have those burning shrines, you have like snow-capped mountaintops, you have these ruined Japanese castles, and you have, and with that verticality to be like able to stand on roofs at any time, you have a lot of opportunities to just like jump onto a high area and take it all in.
Okay, let's talk. Staying on the topic of really dark, depressing games set in the past. This one also is multi-platform, but what did you think of A Plague Tale: Innocence?
Gosh, I think it's really interesting what they did with that game.
Dishonored, you can weaponize rats.
Yes, I played that game all the way to the end, and it was a little bit of I really wanted to, and it was a little bit of I was having a good time. But there was definitely a feeling of, like, this isn't as good as it could be, and there are several blatant reasons why.
Oh, I thought you were going to go the route of That Dragon Cancer and say, yeah, I was enjoying myself, but I was also getting incredibly depressed and didn't really want to see the ending because I knew I'd be extremely depressed by the time it ended.
I will say the Plague Tale Innocence guides you down, like there's always a little bit of hope that things will turn out the way that you want them to. And ultimately, I would say that I don't want to give anything away, but back to what I was saying, though, there are some very specific downfalls of Plague Tale that I hope that they would. Apparently, they're gonna do some sort of follow up to it, as Sobo Studios is, and I really hope they don't have traditional combat in the next one, because combat in Plague Tale was horrible.
Like, you're a girl who has a sling, and you have to wind up a lot to throw a rock. And in the midst of this, you have a bunch of guys in armor with swords just running at you and stabbing you, and it only takes one of them getting to you to kill you and just make you have to redo the whole experience again. So it was like – it was things like that that like – I really felt the grind in Plague Tale when I had to do combat or anything like that. When it was like letting me do puzzles and letting me do like play with the rats and like figure out how to use the rats and the humans against each other, that is when the game shined the most, and I wish I would have stuck to that, because anytime you got backed into a corner and you had to fight, like, it had boss battles. Would you expect a game like Plague Tale to have boss battles?
Yeah, but not a traditional one, no.
I mean, yeah. Like, the last boss battle is actually pretty good, because it is straight up like you use the puzzle-solving mechanics that you've been using through the game, but there are a couple of them where it's just like straight up use the sling and bop him in the head when you get a chance, and it's just like, I hate it. I hate that you made me do that when you've been having me do all these clever puzzle solutions throughout the game. These combat things suck. Don't do them. Or at least do them better, or in a way that they don't, like, feel so horrible. Where I don't... Because, like, at the end of the day, you are a little girl, and you're going against full-grown men with swords.
And yet somehow you're lethal with a slingshot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. By a girl.
But yeah, Plague Tale Innocence, it's a, it's hard for me to say it's a great game. I would say it's a interesting game that, might be worth checking out and seeing if you want to play through it.
So, there are some other games, we're going to talk about these. I think most of them are multi-platform anyway. But I was just looking down the list, and some of these were just disappointing. I forgot that Metro Exodus actually came out this year.
You know, I expected that people would like that game a lot more, but I don't hear much about it.
Here's the thing. People were disappointed it became just another open-world game. I mean, the original Metro Exoduses, they had you in a linear story, but it was a corridor shooter. What?
It was a corridor shooter.
Yeah, but even so, it never felt like you were being railroaded, so to speak. You know, I just think that when they went open world, it just a lot of the charm left it, because when you do an open world, it's hard to have characterization because you don't know what order people are going to be doing things, so they can't really grow. They have to remain on one personality for most of the game. You know, like I said, I forgot that it even came out this year. I think maybe it's because it feels like a game from 2015.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. That's supposed to be the end of the series, right?
I don't know. If it made its money, you can bet they'll have another Metro game. I don't think there's a new one's going to be coming out anytime soon though.
Should we talk about Outer Worlds, since that's also on the PlayStation?
Yeah, I mean, that's multi-platform. Let's go for it. I already made my feelings. I did not like it, and it was shocking to me. I think I really am done with the Fallout game. I just can't stand it anymore. I just don't want to do a Fallout game.
I finally got down to the very, very last mission, and I'm going to be probably finishing that one up right before the end of the year.
I want to finish this before 2020.
So far, I would say that the standout thing about Outer Worlds is that, like, I love that there are, like, three or four different ways to everything. It is traditional in that sense that, like, they did do a good job by giving you options to go about everything.
My answer is whoop-dee-doo.
I think they did a good job. I think they did a good job at crafting a set of worlds that were interesting to explore, and
monster.
Of worlds to explore, the games that are completely boring. Let's talk about Death Stranding. All you do in that game is explore and try not to tip over.
I had a chance to play this recently, and it was only like a small slice of the game, but I was listening to people tell me about what they thought of it, and it was interesting because even they were like it's not like going to grip you or impact you greatly, but what I got out of it is that there was a certain sense of it was therapeutic being like really? just play, sort of in a way that like No Man's Sky was supposed to be, where you're just sort of walking across this land, exploring it, figuring out ways to put these packages together in a meaning, in a sense that like you won't tip over or make the game harder for yourself.
The only thing that saved it from being a boring mess is that Hideo Kojima once again just wrote a batshit insane script.
There's long periods of time between the batshit insane scripts, though.
I know, but come on, rain that makes you age,
right? And I think
fetuses that are in your stomach that tell you that are basically your.
I will say this: there is a lot in that game, and I don't know that it's necessarily a good lot all the time, but like. When I was playing it, I was playing it with a buddy, and he like literally just fucked up everything horribly. He overloaded his character, took off the suit that's supposed to help you be able to manage weight properly, drove a vehicle way down the road, and then walked back while carrying like way too much. And it was just like amazing how horribly he messed himself up. And then when I got the controller, I like sort of fixed the situation little by little, and it kind of like stood out to me just how much you could fuck up your own adventure, but also you still have the tools to sort of piece it back together and get back on the right track.
The game was a bit forgiving, at least.
I would say that it's more like there was emergent gameplay there that like the mechanics allow you to make so many mistakes, but the mechanics also allow you to sort of fix those mistakes a little bit.
I would say that, except for the fact when you get to a certain point of the game and you're able to use vehicles, then it's just game over. Bore. All that mechanic goes away. It's like, oh, whatever. Now it's just FedEx time.
The vehicles aren't even like a surefire way to just get through the game because, like, I don't know if you've seen, but like the terrain can be awful.
Isn't it the there's one thing that's sort of like you're on a wire and it just like a gondola or something like that.
Once you get
that ability, it's like that's it. The game's broken.
The zip line does make things quite a bit easier, but I don't think it breaks the game. I think it's just sort of like you get to that point and suddenly everything – because it takes a while before you get to the zip line too. And I have to imagine that when you do, it feels like suddenly, oh my god, I can just suddenly skip all these things that were frustrating me. And I have to imagine that's a bit of a relief.
By the way, you know what? We're going to take a break from discussing games that came out in 2019 because we didn't do a podcast last week. And I'm pretty sure the number one news item, at least for you, TJ, would have been, for me too, would have been the announcement of A Wolf Among Us 2.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see that they're moving along with that game because I am so ready to jump back into that storyline.
Yeah, and they have all the actors and the writers are back, so at least it'll be internally consistent.
Yeah.
That is a really good thing.
I really hope they put it together well. Like,
I've seen, Snow is getting really, really... Although I know from the comic book, she's an absolute bitch. So I think the series is showing just how she became an absolute bitch.
Yeah. I haven't read any of the comics, so I wouldn't know.
I haven't read them, but I know from osmosis what happens in the comics. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that Snow White in the first game wasn't dead because it would have been kind of awkward to have the comics having her alive and a main character the entire time, so.
Yeah. Even so, like, the things that weren't, like, canonically kept together by
basically what you have to do to get to the first graphic novel. I think they did a good job of storytelling with like the fables that they had.
So, speaking of, did you ever get around to playing The Surge 2?
No. I don't know. I heard it was better than Surge 1, but like how I never heard it was like
at least amazing.
Yeah.
Which is a pity because, you know, a sci-fi Dark Souls is a good idea. You just have to make it compelling.
I think if I was going to go back to a Dark Souls game, it would probably be Code Vein, and I haven't played it yet, but I'm thinking about picking it up in 2020.
Code Vein, I will say this, it's the most anime thing that ever animated. It is every single anime stereotype you can think of.
Yeah, sounds about right. Sega and Namco Bandai have been kind of on track with that lately, where they've been doing a lot of just like major anime stuff between.
For a Dark Souls game, you know, I didn't find it all that difficult, and I don't play many Dark Souls games. I mean, when I make a mistake, I know what I did wrong. The thing is, I started playing it, and I just got bored. Because there's just so much anime I can take. If you have a high anime, well, you must. If you're playing Arc System games, you must have a high tolerance for anime.
Some people really enjoy anime.
I get that. I don't. I mean, I grew up with it. Damn it. I watched Battle of the Planets in the 70s.
Yeah. Well, that is to say, if you like the Dark Souls style and you like anime, then Code Vein is exponentially both.
Then there's Greedfall. Here's the thing. I wanted to like Greedfall so much. It felt like it was doing everything that Mass Effect Andromeda did well. I mean, it did well what Mass Effect Andromeda failed at. But after a while, I don't know. It's just I don't like the characters. And that's the other thing with the Outer Worlds. I didn't like the characters either. I've gotten to the point in which if I'm not hooked on the characters, then, you know, I don't care. Which is why I avoided Kingdom Hearts 3 like the plague, because I knew I was going to hate the characters. So did either of you play Kingdom Hearts 3?
No.
See, there you go. I have to ask Paul, did he play it? And I'm willing to bet you he did not. Kingdom Hearts 3 had such a bad word of mouth on release that I think it scared everybody away.
Yeah. I mean, like, that is a long time to... you know what my worst fear is? That Cyberpunk 2020...
I don't think it's the length of time. I just think it's the fact that Kingdom Hearts 3 had such a bad story.
Well, I also think it's the fact that everybody built up an expectation in their head that Square was never going to be able to satisfy. Like, that is...
I mean, on one hand, I'm glad they delivered, you know, as opposed to another trilogy game that people are waiting for and never going to get. At least Kingdom Hearts came out, and I think part of it is that it looks like a game where you need to have played the first two or however many games there are to understand what's going on in this game. And I know there's a lot of people that don't like that. And for me, I enjoy that kind of thing where it's like, oh, all these games lead up to one continuous story. That's awesome. But for other people, they feel intimidated and scared and like, oh, I don't want to do this. I can't commit that much to, you know, go play all these games or read all these books or see all these movies just to understand this latest one. So that could be a problem for some people.
Did you play Samurai Showdown, TJ? I know you were excited for it.
Yes, of course I did.
I figured. How was it?
It was good. I think it's very... The game is very samey to the original style. Like, big hits, very, very... lots of footsies. and, like, not a lot of combos, but they exist if you work hard enough to find them. The game is good. I think it's very, like... I think it's very... What's the word? It's very respectful of the source material it came from, and to a degree like that it feels like you're playing a game like the old school arcades from like 1990, and it just feels like they just got this huge graphical update that makes it that brings it into 2019 and makes it look good. But it's still ostensibly Samurai Showdown. I thought that was one of the best. I think that was the best fighting game this year. I love Mortal Kombat 11, and I still play Mortal Kombat 11.
Yeah, I was about to say that came out in April, and no one talks about it.
I still play that game all the time. I'm pretty good at collector. I made it out of pools at Evo, and when I played that game, and I don't know. Like between the two of them, I think Samurai Showdown is technically better. I think it's more pretty, but I play Mortal Kombat 11 more.
You know, this game came out in February, and now I've heard nothing about it. Is it still being played? And the game I'm talking about is Apex Legends, because it hit like a thunderbolt when it first came out. It was challenging everything. It was challenging Overwatch and stuff like that. Now I don't hear anything about it.
It is still being played all the time. It's not even hard to find a game in that one.
But it doesn't seem to be having the same zeitgeist, you know, about it that Overwatch did.
Well, when it first came out, everybody thought it was going to be the Fortnite killer, which for one weekend it did look like that. That said, like it's trailed off, it's tapered down, but it hasn't gone away. People are still playing it. EA is hosting tournaments for it. People are like esports teams are putting together squads for it. It's still there. It's just not what I like. EA and Respawn had no idea what they had in their hands, and they did not capitalize on it properly.
Yeah, it was also Respawn. And the thing about that is that it's sort of like it felt like they just stripped down Titanfall to its really bare essentials, and it makes me feel like we may never see a Titanfall 3.
They've said several times that they're eventually going to go back to it.
I don't believe them one second. Titanfall cost too much to make.
Well, that and like they just put Titanfall 2 on PlayStation Plus Games with Gold, whatever it is, and people were digging it. People were rediscovering Titanfall 2 and really enjoying it. Like it was interesting to see how many people had not played Titanfall 2 just getting into that game, and just like seeing what all the hubbub was about. Because Titanfall 2 came out at a time that was just real unfortunate. It landed right between a Call of Duty game and a Battlefield game, and just like nobody cared.
You want to talk about a game that fell with a thud when it came out?
Mm-hmm.
That's Borderlands 3. It came out, people said, yep, that's a Borderlands game, and no one cares.
I would argue that people do care, like, but at the same time...
I heard more people talking about Rage 2.
It is exactly as you say. Borderlands 3 is just more Borderlands. I played it, and it's just more. It doesn't feel substantially different from either Borderlands 2 or Borderlands 1. It just feels like more Borderlands. And it doesn't – and despite the fact that, like, the characters are new and they all have their own abilities and they have some extras this time, it still just kind of feels like you're just doing the same old thing that you've always done in Borderlands. I'll tell you what co-op game I did actually pick up and enjoy more than Borderlands was Remnant from the Ashes.
Yes, I think you talked about this.
My colleagues introduced me to this game, and like, it's Dark Souls with guns. It's co-op Dark Souls with guns, and it's also a little bit procedurally generated. So like, in one game you might run into certain bosses, and in another game you might run into different bosses that you won't see in the other game. And so it's sort of like you just get this random grab bag of like situations and enemies that it's just like – it's interesting. It's really interesting the way they set this up. The game is buggy. I will say that.
It was published by Perfect World. What do you expect?
I've had a couple situations where the game crashed on me. There was times where certain mechanics that were supposed to be happening weren't happening.
It's fucking Perfect World Entertainment. What did you expect? All this shit is buggy.
And I will say that, like, the game is fun enough that it didn't matter to me. Like, we still pushed through because we were having such a good time that the bugs didn't break the experience.
Here's the thing, you know, Focus Home Entertainment, all their games are basically bug free. I mean, they may have tweaks and all that stuff, but they always feel like they're about to fall apart at any second. Have you noticed this? Well, so they always have the same feel to them. I'm not saying this is, but, you know.
Yeah, this is Perfect World and Gunfire.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
It did have kind of that feeling of falling apart at the seams sometimes, but at the same time, it was like, I guess speaking to its credit, whenever it would like do something like crash, I would just like be yelling at the game, Remnant, I just want to love you. Just let me love
you. Sounds
like
me and State of Decay 2. Sounds like me with State of Decay 2. Just so you know, that's the game I've been playing day upon day upon day upon day upon day. I don't know why, I just have been, because I said this before, you know, I am a story-oriented person, and when I'm doing a game that allows you to create your own story, you know? So you like the running guns, the retro running guns. Did you play Blazing Chrome?
I did not. I played it at PAX South earlier this year, but I haven't played it past that. It is very much Contra Alien Wars. Like, just as fun, just as hard.
And we all know you like it hard.
I do.
So, let's talk about some of the bigger games. I don't think either of you have played Gears 5.
No, I haven't played that.
Nope, I never made it there.
So Gears 5 is absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the best-looking games you'll ever see. It's one of the best-sounding games. And it has Gears 5 gameplay. It's there. But I found myself hooked on the escape gameplay. I forgot the name of the mode, but in which you play a character and you're setting off a bomb. You just have to escape the thing. I think they took the gameplay mode that was in Fear. And just brought it to that. But, you know, like I said, you know, Gears 5, it was hot for a while, and then it just went away. I don't know. Maybe there's too many games, and people are just easily distracted nowadays. Because the game will come, it'll hit like a thunder, and then it'll leave. I mean, look at Control. I mean, Control came out, people said, yep, that's a game, and that was it.
Yeah, I feel like Control, like, it's one of those games that people tell me all the time that it's super good, it's really good, it's game of the year material, but like, I don't really, it kind of feels like it just gets swept under the carpet all the time.
Well, sort of sounds like the Outer Wilds. Not Outer Worlds, Outer Wilds.
I love the Outer Wilds.
Here's the thing. Everybody says, you got to try Outer Wilds. You got to try Outer Wilds. But you know what the problem with that is? I think that sets up expectations way too high. Like, people will go into it expecting a mind-blowing experience when all they get is something that's more meditative and something you're supposed to chill, you know. The exploration is really, you know, smooth and slow, you know, and you have that mechanic of the universe keeps on resetting after the supernova. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's a mystery that you're trying to solve. And that's all it is. It's not very action-y. It's more like exploration, you know, find evidence, go back, you know. But yeah, I like the Outer Wilds, but it's not a game that I'm going to be, you know, want to play again.
I guess people keep overselling games to you a little bit. They're too excited about something that you find not as exciting.
I would recommend Outer Wilds to people that like puzzle games, because it is it is, like, from top to bottom, a good puzzle.
It's also, you know, I would say people who enjoy Kerbal might enjoy it too, even though there's no ship construction. It still has that realistic physics part of it that just, you know, it's a microsystem. I think, like, oh, geez, what's the name of that Joss Whedon series? The cowboy science fiction thing?
Firefly.
Yeah. It's sort of like Firefly in the respect that you have this really tiny solar system, so everything is, you know, within reach, but you're always uncovering these little things about it. It's very meditative. It's a slow game, but, you know, if you want a meditative slow game that, you know, that has some serious science fiction to it, try it, you know?
I think it also is one of those games that allows for some pretty hilarious mishaps. on one of my runs, I had
especially when you fly into the sun. Oops.
When I was playing with my buddies, they did a lot of things that wasted time, and eventually they just kind of gave up. And so I took the control, and I didn't have much time left before the sun explodes. So I worked my way over to getting the ship codes, got into the ship. I had never flown it before, and so I crashed it phenomenally and lodged it between a tree and the observatory, and could not get it loose. And so I jumped out of the ship, hoping that, like, if I went back to the landing pad, maybe it'll respawn. But, like, I had sent the elevator up to the ship, and so when I hit the button, the elevator came down and crushed me. And it was one of those things where, like, I just couldn't even be mad at the game. It was kind of hilarious how, like, silly the mistakes were.
I actually, you know, the game also was really scary at one point. I was on this planet, you know, with the whirlpools, or, you know, the water spouts, and I was inside a thing, and everything just went dark. It's like, holy shit, oh no, the sun just exploded. I was in that moment of where everything is dark, you know, because there's no light, you know, it's sort of like really creepy, and then I respawn because, you know, the time loop. But that was really creepy. Just being inside a cave when the sun explodes. Like I said, it's one of those games you should try, just to try it. You know.
I think it's a better Jonathan Blow game than anything that Jonathan Blow's come up with.
Yeah.
And nothing against his first one, but I do think that it's kind of in that vein, and I do think it's very, very good at it.
So let's talk about the game that I just wanted to murder every single character that was in it. And that's Devil May Cry 5. I played an hour. I wanted to take the characters and put them into a wood chipper. Seriously, I could not stand them at all. And I love Bayonetta. But the characters in Devil May Cry 5, I just couldn't stand them. And I don't care if they were being deliberately annoying. Deliberately annoying is still annoying. At least Bayonetta didn't annoy me. The only character who might have annoyed me in that game was Ezio, but at least he was funny enough not to do it.
I will say that Devil May Cry does very well in its action. Like,
I enjoy doing it in Bayonetta, which took that action, and I think Devil May Cry stole Witch Time from Bayonetta, didn't it?
No, it's the other way around. Bayonetta stole Devil Trigger from Devil May Cry to make Witch Time. I mean, it's like the director for Bayonetta, Hideki Kamiya, he worked on Devil May Cry 1, 2, and 3, and then he went on to make Bayonetta. But he sort of mentored the guy that is handling Devil May Cry 5, handled Devil May Cry 4 and Devil May Cry 5. So, like, I have to imagine that, like, the spirit is still there. And I think he's still consulted on Devil May Cry 5. So it is, like, some of his vision is still there, but it's always been, like, I think it's very much the difference between, like, male fantasy cheese and female fantasy cheese.
I don't think so. By the way, I did watch Bayonetta 2 because I don't have a Switch or anything, so I just watched all the cutscenes, and wow, I was really affected. I loved the story in Bayonetta 2 because someone said, "Well, it's just like Bayonetta 1." No, God no. I mean, spoilers. I mean, her relationship with her father is really, really touching, and it puts a whole new light on Bayonetta 1. So, yeah. I loved Bayonetta 2. I wish I could have played it, but, you know, just doing the thing was fine enough. Do you want to talk about Age of Wonders Planetfall? Did you play it?
I didn't play that one.
Okay. How about you, Scott? Did you play it?
No, I haven't played that one.
Tell us what isometric RPG you played this year that you really enjoyed. Because I know that's all you played.
No, actually, I've been playing other games. I don't know if I mentioned Link's Awakening on the Switch. I did play that, which was a good remaster or remake of the Game Boy Advance game to the Switch. And yeah, you wake up on this mysterious island after a storm, and you go around collecting these instruments to awaken the egg, which I feel like it's going to end. I haven't completed it, but I feel like the ending is that you're really probably still asleep out in the ocean somewhere, and that this is really just a dream, or you're like in a coma or something, and you're trying to wake yourself up, or something weird like that, I think, is going on that island. But it's a really fun game. The music is really good. I like the cutesy graphics. It's very nice. So it's a nice hold you over for the Breath of the Wild 2 that'll be out in a year or two, probably two. It's a good game, I think.
So this year was really the year of Civilization, because not only did you have it coming out on console, but we forgot that this past February, Gathering Storm came out, and we're talking to the guy who runs the Turncast. So I'll ask you, how has the Gathering Storm expansion affected your gameplay?
I haven't played too much Civ, but I have watched videos of what Gathering Storm is and the leaders that were put in there, and I think they did some really interesting ideas, like Catherine of Aragon, I think that's the name.
There are two versions of her. Yeah.
Right, one for France and one
for England. Yeah.
Right, and I thought that was an interesting concept to do, so you could literally have her in the game twice, playing as France and England, and she could be fighting herself if you wanted to set it up that way. Yeah, it's schizophrenic. So that would be kind of funny. But also, it gives an interesting mechanic in that these disasters can affect your land tiles and change the value of them, either making them better in the case of a volcanic eruption, or worse with a sandstorm, blizzard, or droughts. And, of course, you can affect climate change by emitting too many carbon emissions. I really just didn't want a busy mechanic like the random pollution that would show up in the previous three games, where you just have random pollution show up and you just send a worker to go clean up. And that was kind of their late game, trying to give you something to do while you're hitting end turn. Just have some pollution show up and send a worker to go clean it. Didn't seem as fun. But this feels like a more well thought out mechanic.
So, TJ, tell us about Tetris Effect, because I know you played that, and you also got to play it in VR.
I like Tetris Effect a lot. It is, again, one of those experiences that is just like, it's, I wouldn't say it's like pure Tetris, but I would say it's very much like a therapeutic game. I do want to talk about one of my other favorite competitive games of this year, and like a complete standout surprise, was Tetris 99.
I don't know it.
It's a battle royale featuring Tetris.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
It is awesome. And not only like the way that they put that together, you basically have
should mention that it's actually free.
Mm-hmm. It is free to play. The way you put it together is that you have four different options for like attacks. Like you can attack players, other players that aren't attacking, or you can defend against players that are attacking you. And basically, the more you play Tetris, the more you like stack blocks that will suddenly fill up other players' screens.
See,
and
now
screw
just
them over.
Go play Super Puzzle Fighter now.
It is not far different from everything good about Super Puzzle Fighter. If you like Super Puzzle Fighter, I feel like you'll really like Tetris 99.
I don't love it. I just love playing against AI. I don't want to play against other humans. Are you kidding me? Humans? Come on.
But it's the humans.
But it's good. It's really good the way they put it together. It is very difficult to win, but it is enjoyable to play even as you're losing. Like,
for one thing, they keep adding stuff to it, and some of the stuff most of the stuff they're adding to it is like themes, and they get really fun with their themes. They have one that's like a straight up Game Boy style Tetris theme, where it looks straight up like just like you're playing Tetris on the Game Boy version, and they have all sorts of little crossovers they've done, and it's really just like. I think it's like one of the most weirdly standout competitive games of the year, because it's at its core, it's still just Tetris, and you're just playing Tetris with more people. And who knew that that could be ridiculously fun and competitive?
Definitely competitive. I like how you can sabotage other people as you're gaining blocks, and you get dead blocks put into your little Tetris field, and. And it's just all whittled down to the last person. And I watched the Game Grumps play it, and it was really entertaining to watch.
I will say this too, like it is one of those games where like you really have to think about when you're playing, because like it is one of those games that is strangely unaffected by the shoddiness of Nintendo Online. I imagine it's because it doesn't have too much to handle as far as bandwidth goes, but for whatever reason, Tetris 99 has no issue with like online play. It's weird how good it is. And at the same time, it also makes you think about when you play, because as my colleagues put it, you don't want to, if you're trying to win, you shouldn't play in the late hour, in the AM hours, because that's when the Japanese players are up and they're crazy.
That's why you don't play StarCraft, because the South Korean players are up. So I'm going to ask you quickly, have you played My Friend Pedro?
Yes.
Okay. So talk about that, because I didn't get a chance to play it. It just looks batshit crazy.
It is a John Woo wet dream. It is. That is the best way to describe it. You pretty much just run and gun with two guns, making all sorts of crazy dramatic moments happen in which you just like do gun ballet. And it's a platform shooter. Like, I guess the closest thing I would say to is like Contra, but the way in which it works and the things that you can do, like basically you can jump off. You're basically doing backflips in slow motion, careening bullets off of any metallic thing that you can see it and ricocheting them into people's heads and making explosions happen and not looking at them because you're too cool. It's ridiculously
so batshit. You should say that this is a 2D, 3D game, sort of like Shadow Complex, except John Woo's gunplay.
Yeah. It is 2.5D. It is... it is straight up an action platformer. It's from our good
Devolver
friends.
Digital. Yeah. Of course it was. If it wasn't Devolver Digital, Devolver would come swing in and kidnap it for its own. Just like Ape Out. Ape Out could only be published by Devolver Digital. As well as that game that they haven't released it yet, but have you seen, you've probably seen it. They've been showing it off at PAX and at E3, the game in which you're just a pair of hands, you're a ball with hands, and you're trying to help your friends. I forgot the name of it, but you've seen that game, right?
I was thinking of Carrion, which
Ball with Hands. That's damn it, I saw it too. And you're clinging. You're like Heave Ho. Yeah, that's a good game. That's a good two player game too.
And does it actually come out? Is the question. I don't.
Yeah, it came out. It's on Switch.
Okay.
I watched the Game Grumps play that, and Danny and Aaron.
The problem with Evo is I cannot possibly imagine not playing it. That game has to be played on the same machine, not multiplayer, but with your friends next to you. You know.
Probably, yeah.
Because that game loses all its charm if you play online, I would imagine. I don't think you can play online. I think you have to play it on the same machine.
That game is fun, though.
Yeah, it's very challenging. You're swinging around. You do like these crazy acrobatics to get your goal.
Sometimes you have to coin. Do a leap of faith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The physics of that game really make for some fun moments.
I mean, it's a sort of game like like a duck game, you know, in which you have to play with other people in front of you. It's one of those games in which it's very easy to watch people play without having to watch yourself.
Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to the other Devolver stuff. I think the one that I'm most looking forward to is I guess this has already come out. Carrion.
Yeah, that's coming out next year. It hasn't come out yet.
I'm so excited for that one. The idea of it is just so Carrion is it's reverse horror. You're a creature that escapes from a lab and becomes stronger by devouring scientists and anyone who gets in your way as you're trying to escape, and you like evolve different abilities as you go. It looks ridiculous, but it also looks very good.
I'm not gonna hate me, but I haven't played Enter the Gungeon yet, even though now it's available for free. That is available to me for free. I haven't played it yet, but I keep on hearing good things about it.
Yeah, Enter the Gungeon is one of those things. It's kind of like it's.
I'll tell you what I'm not gonna play. I'm not gonna play Genital Jousting.
Yep.
I haven't played Mother Russia Bleeds either. Just, you know, I hear good things about
that. Mother Russia Bleeds, much like Blasphemous, is a very beautifully ugly game.
I also haven't played Hotline Miami, in case you're wondering. Have you played Ion Fury, though?
No, but I heard very good things about it.
For those of you who don't know, it's basically a build engine game. Made by the guys who made by 3D Realms, no less. It was supposed to be called Iron Maiden, but Iron Maiden threatened to sue, which I don't get. How you think they're really going to confuse you with a video game called Iron Maiden? So it's Ion Fury instead.
Yeah, it's the best semblance of a Quake game in a time where there are no good Quake games.
Here's the thing. I want to talk about this game because I talked about it before. There's one game that hooked me playing it. I was really, really into it. It was so good. And then the ending just ruined the rest of the game for me. And I'm talking about Void Bastards. I could not believe it. It was like, wait, that's it?
That's yeah, the game? I remember you talking. I remember you gushing over this one because it was like a straight up good. System Shock
great,
experience.
It was a great first-person roguelike. It was an awesome first-person roguelike, and I was really into playing it. And then the ending happened. Is like, no, you can't do this. I was okay with the original Mass Effect 3 ending. I didn't like it, but you know, it didn't make me hate Mass Effect 3. But I can't play Void Bastards because of the ending of Void Bastards. I can't believe they did that shit, you know? And here's the thing about Void Bastards. It's the sort of game in which you could picture how they could ramp it up. You know? All you had to do is keep going, add new enemies, make it more and more difficult. You know, I would have been in for that shit. It would have been my version of Dark Souls.
Yeah.
But no, they had to end it like that. And I'm still not giving away the ending. If you play it, I'm glad I didn't pay for it. I would have been pissed off I spent money.
Yeah.
I cannot recommend Void Bastards, but then I can recommend it wholesale. I hope if they make Void Bastards 2 that they understand they can't end a game like that. Just end it. It was a slap in the face.
That's a shame.
And it wasn't just because the story was a slap in the face, but just ending it there, I felt like there was so much game that could have gone. Anyways, did either of you play Horus?
What is it?
Horus.
No.
Oh, no.
It's an indie game made by a single guy. It's charming as heck, but it's also the longest game you'll ever play. It'll be like, when is the story going to end? And it's, you know, here's the thing. It's one of those things that happens when you have a single programmer, and it's an IP they created, so they have so many, they have all these ideas, and they just decided to stick it all in one game.
I don't know, I spent 200 hours playing Skyrim, so saying
well,
this
here's
is the
thing.
Long...
You know what, Scott? Then Horus is the game for you. It's on PC only, though. It's just a PC
okay.
game. You might enjoy it.
That'd be good. I like long games, especially.
Well, it's not just a long game. It's a slice of life game.
Hmm.
And the character you'll enjoy. I mean, if you know. Before we get to what a lot of people consider the game of the year, let's talk about the Star Wars game.
Jedi Fallen Order. Yes.
So, how did you you played it, Scott?
I did finally get it to play after the second patch was installed. it is a beautiful game. It has a good story. You get to customize your character. You can change whatever outfit he's wearing and the color of his lights.
Said that the main character is bland, and I don't agree with him. I thought I enjoyed following him. You know, I didn't think he was all that bland.
Cal Katarn is bland only in comparison to certain other Star Wars protagonists.
Well, he's not Cal Katarn, though. It's Cal something.
Yeah.
Cal Katarn was from Dark Forces. And
Right.
Cal is, you know... Here's the thing. I would love to see what happens to him next. You know, he's enough of a... Here's the thing. He's maybe... I don't know. Maybe it's because he's created to be that you could identify with him, so you could put him in your place. But if they want to do that, then you should have had a customizable character editor then.
Right, because like they kind of did that with Darth Revan, but Darth Revan is cool as fuck.
You can customize your character, like I was saying. You can change what outfit he's wearing. I mean, they wanted a specific character and a specific story that this was, you know, so it wasn't. It wasn't a blank slate kind of person. It was like, this is what we're making. But you can change his outfit, his ship, his little droid, his lightsaber. You can customize all this other stuff. But this is who you're playing as. You're playing Cal.
See, the problem with the game is that it has to take into account on how you play him. So he can't be too good or too evil. He has to be sort of neutral so that at least... I mean, he's a Jedi, right? But still, he has to be enough that you don't really assign a... you can't make him too one way or the other. He has to be somewhere in the middle there.
I feel like Forced Unleashed was so much Sith that it was, you know, about time that we just play a straight Jedi and just play a good guy for once.
You can do some straight up Sith things with Cal.
Okay.
I mean, in the way of like, I've seen like one of the most standout things that I ever saw was like this gif of somebody force pushing a star trooper off of a cliff, then force pulling him back and stabbing him once he arrived.
You know, in these games, in this game, and Force Unleashed and all that stuff, you know, it sucks to be a stormtrooper because you're just a fucking you're just a fucking toy to these people. And the thing is, they don't even straight up attack you. You know, they attack groups of you, and they do some. And if there's only one of you, then you know you're going to have some sadistic thing happen to you.
Yes, it is. It is funny. Like the terrible things that you can do with force powers and a lightsaber are just things that players are going to do because they can. And so I think. There's a little bit of a disconnect between just like who Cal is and the way you play him.
Yeah, I noticed that in this game you can't behead, dismember, or cut in half people, but you can do that to animals in the game. Like you can find this targ beast or whatever, right, and you cut that thing in half.
Because I remember the complaint was that when he was attacking stormtroopers, all you see was this this cut on them, this glowing cut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There were a lot of people asking for them to patch in dismemberment on Stormtrooper.
Here's the problem. The game is, the reason why they don't have that isn't because they're squeamish. It's that these levels are huge and detailed. There was no way they were going to be able to have dismemberment in it.
The game is absolutely gorgeous. I'll give it that. It may be one of the prettiest games I've seen in a long
time.
And
it rewards exploration in a big way because there are so many hidden spaces that you have to find.
Mm-hmm. And this is a very high difficulty level as well. The battles are apparently very intense and very key on using parries and blocks and dodging, and it's a very difficult game.
So, TJ, did you ever get around to playing After Party?
I didn't.
Okay. For those of you who don't know, After Party is a game made by the same people who did Oxenfree, and it is basically the same gameplay, just with tiny little mini-games at some points, but they fit into the narrative. And just like Oxenfree, I played through it, I got an ending that I wanted, and I'm never going to play it again. I know there's multiple endings and all that stuff, but I got the ending that I liked, and I'm going to stick by it, damn it. Just like Fallout 4, I got the ending with the Minutemen doing everything without any help from anybody else. That's the ending I wanted, and that's the ending I got. So yeah, I recommend After Party. The only thing that I have a problem with is that the main characters are two college 20s. Their problems are college 20s. And it's sort of like I'm at the point in which I recognize my past and say, yeah, I remember that. I was an idiot. These characters are idiots because I already dealt with that shit.
Yeah, like, I feel like that was an ongoing thing in Oxenfree, and it made sense in Oxenfree.
Oh, no, here's the thing about Oxenfree, though. I never felt like that, though. I never felt like these characters were idiots. I felt like they were having real problems. I think the problem is that After Party is overtly a kooky comedy with some real mood whiplash depression, but I don't know. The characters in Oxenfree, at least, I enjoyed seeing where they were coming from, you know?
Hmm.
There are two characters, and although I will say I love, oh damn, I forgot her name, but she's conjured up to be your personal tormentor, and she comes in and starts razzing you. She's hilarious. Oh damn, I forgot her name, but she's a great character. And at without spoiling anything, at the end you have to pick characters to be your friends to help you, and even though she was an absolute cunt and she just like meeting you, you find out something that devastates her, and it just makes you want to go, oh, well, you can be my friend, even though your job is to try and torment me because we're in hell. So, yeah, I'm trying to remember her name. But, yeah, I mean, it's a play-once kind of game, you know. You'll enjoy playing it. And did you replay Oxenfree?
I did not.
Okay, then it's the same thing with Oxenfree. I didn't want to play Oxenfree again. I didn't want to play After Party again. But I will say this: I definitely do not regret it playing it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, if there's some games that I just want a single story for, that was my single story.
I understand that, because like when I got Skyrim, I wanted one ending. I didn't want to worry about all the other endings. Wanted like one kind of result, and I tend to stick to that kind of result. So yeah, I can understand that. You got the story you wanted.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember her name because it's such a funky, such a twee name. Oh yeah, Sister Mary Wormhorn. yeah, I mean, the game, obviously, just like Oxenfree, is a metaphor for something. I'm not going to give it away. So, but I do know there's two endings, one in which you stay in hell, the other one you escape from hell, and the one I got was I stayed in hell, and I really liked that ending. That's all I'm going to give away. So let's talk about Crackdown 3. I really enjoyed it, and it got low reviews, and I think what people seem to forget, it's Crackdown. It's Crackdown. What else did you want? You know, the graphics were better. The gameplay was better than the first Crackdown. I mean, I just don't get why people had. Was it the delay? I don't know. I mean, the multiplayer was ass. I mean, the multiplayer was literally tacked on. No, literally, it was tacked on. It was a separate game that you had to download.
I think that would if it had bad multiplayer, that's definitely going to be a huge mark against that game, because I know a lot of people like playing multiplayer games.
No, I mean, you can play multiplayer in the game as co-op. I'm talking about competitive multiplayer. Because the competitive multiplayer had what the original Crackdown 3 was supposed to have, and that is completely destructible buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided they couldn't do it for Crackdown 3, so the game was made with only a few things that could be, which is fine. I don't care. So I liked Crackdown 3 a lot. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I don't have any big strong opinions on it, other than the fact that Terry Crews was there. And,
yeah, and you can play as Terry Crews if you want to.
Terry Crews is a real life crackdown character.
So let me ask you a question. Why didn't you like Jump Force, TJ?
Why didn't I like Jump Force?
It seemed like it would be your shit.
No, it is not my shit at all. It is a... It does the same thing that a lot of those games do. Like, and when I say a lot of those games, I'm talking about the Naruto fighting games, basically every fighting game like that, where like 3D fighters that are focused on a license almost always just feel cheap.
Yeah, but you did like Dragon Fighter Z.
Yeah, but Dragon Ball Fighter Z is it's
an Arc Systems game with a traditional fighting game. Yeah, I got it.
It's a 2.5D fighter. Yeah, like I love those, and because I can build a strategy around them, and I'm sure you can build a strategy around Jump Force, but it just feels like it doesn't feel like a $60 game. It feels like I should just buy that for like $10 in a bargain bin if I feel like it. Those games have always been more about the license than they were about the actual, like, I guess, they've been way, way more about the imagery, than they were about the actual, like, technicals of it. And I've never been able to play one of those games for a long period of time and been like, this is good. I'm having a good time learning. It feels like a mind-numbing experience. Just press button until when.
Speaking of those kind of games, did you ever play Anthem? That came out this year, and it feels like it's been around forever.
Yeah, I didn't play Anthem.
I don't know. I just don't think, you know, it's like they got BioWare, and they ended up making The Division. Seriously? And The Division 2 came out this year, and people actually liked it, which shocked me, because The Division 1 was boring as hell.
Yeah, Division 2 did a lot of things that Division 1 should have done. For one thing, like not making enemies ridiculously resistant to bullets. That said, like, it just... I know that you were a little bit infatuated with Division 1 because it was like a full-on reimagining of certain areas of New York that you
it was the entire area of New York in which I live in. It was actually where I live, where the post office of Madison Square Garden is. You know, it was in Midtown, and I live in that. What's it called? That if I played it, I would have been able to go to my house. Look, my house is in the game.
And like, I love that level of detail. That's an interesting, surreal level of detail to put in a game, like where it's ostensibly about a apocalyptic future. I don't know. I feel like the world of MMO shooters, such as Destiny 2 and Division 2 and whatever else 2, have become too samey. There's nothing about them that stands out from each other other than the fact that it's just like a long, horrible grind. Monotonous tasks over and over again. Destiny 2 was supposed to be like, everybody was like, oh my god, Bungie got out from Activision, now they're going to really make the game that they wanted to make. And you know what they made? They made microtransactions, and they made season passes, and they made a buyable level progress, which is just like, wait, are they out from Activision, or are they just like, or did they get out from Activision but keep Activision's playbook? Because that actually looks like what happened.
Maybe it was always their playbook.
So, I'll tell you a game that I really enjoyed at the front, and then it just soured on me, and that's Swag and Sorcery, which came out earlier this year. And here's the thing about it, is that I would have liked it, except I started saying, oh god, it's going to be the grind of all grinds. and there's just so much grind. Like, I was grinding the game, and then it was saying, no, I'm not having fun anymore. For those of you who don't know, Swag and Sorcery is where you build a town, and you get heroes, and you send them off to go and fight creatures, and then they bring you back resources, and you take those resources and increase the town, and it's just the loop just wasn't doing it for me after a while. It's like, no, I'm done.
Oh, it's from the guys who made Graveyard Keeper and
yes,
Punch Club.
Yes, I know. Too. It was by the guys who made Graveyard Keeper. And it had a great aesthetic. But it didn't work.
That's a shame. I do like Graveyard Keeper a lot.
And it was, you know, it could have been the next Graveyard Keeper, but it turned out to be just a grind fest. Did you ever play Darksiders Genesis?
Yes, of course I did.
Oh, okay. So, for those who don't know, this is Darksiders meets Diablo.
It's very good. You play as War and Strife, and you can either do it solo and command both of them, or you can control, or you can go co-op with someone. I gotta say, the way they set up like abilities, the exploration of the maps, the interactions, the boss fights, all of it, I would say it reminded me of all the things I liked about Marvel Ultimate Alliance at its best. I know it's very much supposed to be like.
Oh, that reminds me. They're coming back with Dark Alliance again, which is great. For those who don't know, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance was AD&D Diablo, and they're bringing it back.
Yes. Yes, they are. I don't know much about that one.
Yeah, but getting back to Darksiders Genesis.
Yeah, like, I feel like there was a lot about it that I was like, as I was playing, I was like, these are all the things I love about Marvel Ultimate Alliance. And I like the way that the characters control, the way that they play a little different from each other, the way that they get their abilities and everything, and then the way that you can put their abilities together. Like, this, it's straight up like a really like a medieval hell world Marvel Ultimate Alliance. And I really have to believe that they are setting up to do something like that. Like, at this point, every one of the Darksiders game has been about introducing one of the four horsemen. First game was War, second game was Death, third was Fury, and then
yeah,
this last
Fury's
one.
Not, they're not. Yeah, I doubt you're ever going to see Pestilence or Famine.
Yeah, and then this last one was Strife. And so I have to imagine that the idea behind Darksiders Genesis was to play around with this style of co-op dungeon crawler, because I seriously and sincerely believe that they're going to do this again, but with all four horsemen. Because I think that's what you got to do. Like, you have to bring Death and Fury into this sort of setup and make it like full on Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
So let's talk about the look of the game. They opted for a more cartoony look because it's less detailed than, say, Diablo 3, but it looks better than Diablo 3. I always, you know, that's one of the turnoffs of Diablo 3. I never really got into its look. As pixelated as Diablo 2 was, at least it had character.
Yeah, I do think they did a good job with the environments in Darksiders 3 or Darksiders Genesis. Like, the first level
is just Fury.
Yeah. Darksiders Genesis, the first level kicks off with you standing on a, like, cliffside of a desert wasteland, staring over a castle that's being sieged. And the entire level is you working your way down the mountains into that castle in a seamless transition. And I think that's so cool, like, the way they set that up. Like, they really, really did a good job setting up their environments in Darksiders Genesis.
So, did you play Pathologic 2?
No, but I hear it's an experience.
Here's the thing: you know how it's an experience. The Metacritic is 69, and the user reviews is 8.4, which tells you that the people who play it are what's it called, finding something. And you know, the first Pathologic was such a meta game. I mean, the secret ending, and here's a spoiler, is that the developer comes down and talks to you about his decisions with the characters and what he wanted to do.
Didn't they do the same thing in the Matrix game?
I don't know. I never played
I feel like there was a thing where the Wachowski brothers there's like a secret ending where the Wachowski brothers talk to the player about what they wanted to do with the last fight between Agent Smith and Neo.
So I'm going to call this one. This is my I got it totally right award, and that is I knew Shenmue 3 was going to suck, and it sucks. I knew it was going to suck. I don't understand how people thought it was going to be any better. You know, they thought that the Dreamcast games were good, but they weren't. I mean, they were new for the time, but they just were bad. I mean, when the most exciting part of your game is operating a forklift and moving packages around, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's another one of those things that, like, people were waiting for so long just to be disappointed.
Oh, let's talk about disappointment now, because I know what game I'm going to bring up, and you're probably going to moan and just be depressed now. Ready? Let's talk about Wolfenstein Youngblood.
I didn't even bother, because the fact that it was hinged on co-op just didn't sound like something I wanted to do. Like, I don't play Wolfenstein to play co-op. I play Wolfenstein to be to kill Nazis. And
well, that's okay, because the game was like 2 hours long anyway. So
yeah.
I did not
even play for a first-person shooter, that sounds bad.
No, it was even worse than you think. When most of the game can be played in one sitting at E3. It's bad.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, like, the game is not just like when
they
I say
half-assed it, they quarter-assed it.
And when I say hinged on co-op, that game is hinged on co-op.
It was almost like they were starting to do a live game, games as service game before they said, "Oh, this isn't going to work."
Bethesda is really disappointing this year.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say just this year.
This year, so I mean,
I wouldn't. I would say that Bethesda has been on a downward spiral for a while, and I feel like if they don't knock it out of the park,
they're hinging on one game, damn it! They're hinging on all their hopes on one game right now.
If they don't knock it out of the park with Doom Eternal, I don't know what happens with Bethesda after that.
Here's the thing: I don't know how you could fuck up Doom Eternal. I really don't, because it is as basic a shooter as you can get. The only way that game will fuck up is if it formats your hard drive when you install it.
Oh, there was only one game that did that, Pools of Radiance.
One game that had a bug that actually formatted your hard drive. So I didn't play it, but it was sort of like people enjoyed it, but then it just sort of tailed off, and that's World War Z. Just sort of like, that shows how much people want a Left 4 Dead game.
Yeah. World War Z was surprisingly fun. I like the way that it set up classes. The way it set up scenarios, it was all a surprisingly good time for what was for a spinoff of a mediocre zombie movie.
So, did you enjoy The Sinking City?
I haven't played it.
Oh, okay. Because remember that E3 we played the well, we didn't play it together. We played it separately, but there was The Sinking City, and there was Vampyr. Call of Cthulhu, and all of them disappointed. And I know that sucked for you with Vampyr. I mean, you were all in on that shit.
I played a Vampyr all the way to the end, and for what it was worth, I thought the combat was sort of like slapdash, but the story was worth my time. Also, just like Vampyr, focus on interactive games. Like Vampyr and
seem like they're about to fall apart at any second, even if they're bug free.
Vampyr and Plague Tale Innocence have very much a similar, I think, problem for me. And the fact of the matter is that they are compelling enough for me to play all the way to the end, but there are some very glaring issues that make it difficult for me to recommend them. For Vampyr, it was slapdash combat, but on like the silver lining of that, it had one of the most interesting social systems out of any game I've seen. Just like the way in which like you interact with characters and the way that these characters have impact on the areas of the city that they inhabit was cool. I liked that. It was very interesting. But then again, you have like this combat system that is more like padding in between the good moments than anything.
So let's talk about some mediocre shit.
Well, and that's what I wanted to go back to is the reason why I avoided Sinking City is that I heard that is that when I was researching it, because there was a time where I really kind of wanted to play it, but I learned that there's really cool investigation elements.
Yeah, and you know why? Because it takes its entire investigations. Maybe I'm thinking about Call of Cthulhu. No, it's Call of Cthulhu. It was made by the same people who did the Sherlock Holmes games. So, no, I got the wrong game, sorry. But I did hear that in Singing City that navigation was a big part of the game, probably one of the most fun part of the games.
Right, but then you have, like, I've heard that the investigation was fun, but then you had these elements where you just, like, had – the game was padded with certain esoteric elements of investigation where you'd have to go and find a clue, and then you'd have to take it back to the library, and then you'd have to –
Sherlock Holmes thing, yeah.
And you'd have to look through newspaper clippings and like figure out where certain keywords fit. And it's just like it sounds intriguing, but it also sounded extremely padded and grindy. And that just seems to be the story of Focus Home Interactive's library is like intriguing, unique systems padded with grindy, glitchy, unfortunate elements.
So let's talk about two games that were really mediocre that just came and left immediately. Of course, there's Rage 2. We already talked about that. I mean, I played at E3 and I said, yeah, this is not going to do well. It's just going to be in and out and no one's going to care.
Nobody asked for Rage 2. Nobody. Nobody asked for it.
But the other
I remember when they revealed it, they acted like everybody's been demanding this game, and I had never heard of it.
Here's the thing. Rage was a big disappointment, and everybody was hyped up for that game. So they advertised Rage 2 as being, okay, this is the Rage that you were supposed to get. You know, one that was actually, you know, interesting. And I think all they thought they mistook interesting for just making things pink and purple.
Yeah, like, oh, we're going to add color now. Like, okay.
I mean, yes, Rage was a brown. Everything was brown, different shades of brown and gray. I don't know. The gameplay just didn't do it for me. I think they overcomplicated the gameplay, to tell you the truth. The controls were just overcomplicated. They made it like you were doing a fighting game, and that just didn't – I couldn't stand it.
I liked that part of it. I thought that it was very Bulletstorm, and I enjoyed comboing certain things together.
Good for you.
But – what I didn't like was that it was like it was open world in a desert, and it was made by the same people who made Mad Max, and so it was just as interesting.
It's like giving you bad memories. I'll tell you, I didn't mind Mad Max at all. I didn't mind the world of Mad Max. The only thing I didn't like was when you had the storms. I didn't know what you're supposed to do. The storms lasted too long. The other game that came out with hype and it just was okay, it's there and vanished was Far Cry New Dawn. I think that just turned everybody off the game.
I mean, Far Cry 5 ended pretty definitively with a nuke going off and destroying everything.
Nuclear explosions. So I also played a little bit of Phoenix Point. It finally came out the Game Pass. And my issue with it is that it feels clunky. The graphics itself. I mean, when you play XCOM, you know, for Axis and XCOM, it's silky smooth. The way they move, the way they shoot, the way they do everything. This felt like it was a Unity Engine game, and it is a Unity Engine game, but I know that Unity Engine games can be really nice. This felt like my first game. And it's shocking because it's the guy who invented XCOM. Have you played Phoenix Point yet?
I did start Phoenix Point really recently, and
it feels clunky, doesn't it?
Not any more clunky than XCOM Enemy Unknown.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me. No. You gotta, no. The animations and all that stuff were far better than Phoenix Point. Phoenix Point, I don't know. I wanted larger characters and more interesting scenery.
I think you're looking back at
the deeper I get into it, but I just am not feeling it.
I think you're looking back at Enemy Unknown with rose-colored glasses.
I play Enemy Unknown every so often.
I think that Phoenix Point, I mean, it's not like a big budget game like Enemy Unknown was. They don't have the resources behind it, but I feel like it does a good job. I can think that, and I will think that, because it's true.
My cousins have been playing Pokemon Shield. Have you guys been?
I have not played that, but it does look appealing.
Because all I see is when they play, they have to fight these gigantic kaiju versions of monsters of Pokemon. These gigantic kaiju storms and all that stuff. I think it's part of a co-op thing, too. That's where they get their co-op from. You have someone else come into the game, and they try to help you take down this kaiju Pokemon. And
yeah, they make some
extremely rare Pokemon that are almost impossible to beat.
Yeah, they made them in the form of a raids, which is where you you go and fight a Gigantamax. It's called Gigantamax, and you fight these Gigantamax Pokemon as a team. And if you can weaken them enough, you can capture them. And some of them are really interesting takes on, like, the usual Pokemon. It looks like something that I feel like it's something that Nintendo or the Pokemon Company are going to be using as, like, the DLC for that game for a long time if they're smart. Like, that's all you have to do. Just release, like, a new Gigantamax Pokemon every once in a while and say it's up for raid. Go and catch it. That's all you have to do to keep that Pokemon goodness flowing.
Some of the games that came out and just were there was stuff like Need for Speed Heat, you know, Astroneer, which I know a lot of people love. I mean, they were playing it in beta and they loved it, so I don't know. Then you have Masquerade, Vampire the Masquerade Coteries of New York. It's a visual novel game. And it's like most visual novels. There's not you can make choices, but they really don't affect the story. And it's the sort of thing is I'll pick it up when it's $3 on Steam, because I have to wait. They keep on delaying Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, and it's like, what am I gonna do waiting for this game? So I don't know.
Astroneer, a bunch of my friends put Astroneer on their
best games
on their best indies of the year.
Oh. I finally played Plants vs. Zombies Battle for Neighborville, and I was so disgusted I returned it after 24 hours.
That's a shame. I know you had high hopes for that one. Up.
I mean, I just hate it. And you know, I'm going to reinstall Garden Warfare 2 and see if people are playing because they can't stand Battle for Neighborville.
What do you hate about Battle for Neighborville? Like, what does it do? What does it do best?
It's unbalanced, and they have an area in which you can go into, and if you're in the thing, it's just someone was camping the area. It's just so many rookie mistakes. I just can't stand it. So, did you play Rebel Galaxy Outlaw?
Nope, I didn't get there.
Oh, okay. For those who don't know, Rebel Galaxy Outlaw is basically Firefly meets Elite Dangerous. That's what it is. It takes Elite Dangerous and goes into the real nitty-gritty.
Sounds interesting. Does it have a good story?
Yes. The story is what you make of it, basically. Then you also have They Are Billions, and people are playing the shit out of that because it's just a zombie game, but it's a nice little survival thing. I know a lot of friends who like and hate Imperator Rome. They thought it was a missed opportunity. So let's talk about the game that a lot of people are saying is the best of the year. You may disagree, but everybody I talk to seem to think it's the best RPG in years, and I'm pretty sure you can guess what game I'm about to talk about, and that's Disco Elysium. You played it, right, TJ? I think you were talking about it 2 weeks ago.
Yes. It is incredible what they did with that game. It's interesting the way that they built the social systems in it. It's not like your normal RPG. Basically, instead of putting your points in, you do put some points into intelligence, charisma, like physical prowess and all that. But the big major point of that game is dialogue. And so instead of like putting points into like handguns or melee weapons, you put points into things like, if you're going to make a charismatic character, are they more like agile? Are they agile with their movements, or do they have like a certain savoir-faire about them? If you're going to make an intelligent person, are they like into philosophy, or are they into theoretical physics, or are they a math genius?
By the way, just so people know that this is actually a detective RPG, and it's in the not so it's cyberpunk sort of kinda.
Yeah,
it's and, set in the not too distant future.
And so, like, these are qualities that you pick about your character, and when it comes up in the actual dialogues of the story that you have with other characters, you'll have like these moments where if you have a savoir-faire character, you'll have a savoir-faire dialogue option. And also, there's like little skill checks throughout the game where if you've picked those qualities, you might pass them, or if you haven't picked those qualities, you might fail miserably. There is literally one at the beginning of the game where you have where you basically wake up. You're a detective that wakes up naked in your apartment, and you have to get dressed. And one of the things you have to do
is not a handsome person, by the way. Just so people know, this is not a model we're talking about. This is a skeevy, bearded, drunk kind of guy.
And so, like, one of the early parts of the game is you have to get dressed, and one of the things is you have to get your tie off of a moving fan, and you can choose to turn the fan off and pull it down like this, like a logical person, or you can attempt a skill check to pluck your tie off of the moving fan. And if you fail that skill check because you don't have a certain agile trait about you, you grab the tie, yank the fan, it tears off the ceiling, falls down on you, and kills you.
Oh my god, wow.
And it's like stuff like that where it's like it's really extensive how they built the entire dialogue of the game around these traits. And not just traits, but like as you interact with the world, you have thoughts. And these thoughts are collected like inventory, and you can choose to employ them as well in dialogue. Like if you've been thinking about there's a part where you think about a certain artist, like a musical artist, and you have an opportunity to explore your own thoughts about that musical artist, and then that becomes something that you can use later when you're talking to somebody if that musical artist comes up. It's so interesting the way that they've put it together.
Let's talk about the look of the game too. It's isometric, you know, just like something like Pillars of Eternity. But it is gritty is not the word for it. It's something beyond gritty. Saying it's gritty would be an insult to grittiness. It is the weight of grime that's in the game. I mean, I'm surprised if I was to buy this game, you know, in a typical box, I imagine that I would feel like there's dirt in it.
I guess maybe
a disc would come out and there would be also dirt all over it.
I guess somber or
no, not somber at all. Just
or maybe even gritty. Noir.
What?
It's noir? It's colorful in a way it's colorful, but it's colorful in a way that the colors are like a paint. They're like a painting at the museum that you look at and it just looks like a fucking mess, but somebody comes up to you and explains to you how it's actually brilliant.
Right.
I suggested this to you before, Scott. You know.
Yes. I'm looking at it.
And if you like isometric, and if you want to do something different than elves, dwarves, and wizards, you want to do something that's off the beaten path, this is the game to do.
Yes.
Right.
And it is chock full of like compelling characters, interesting storylines. It really does move in a lot of different directions based off the character that you make for yourself. So there's a lot of like making your own story out of it.
This is the best game Obsidian never made. Because it has that Obsidian, everything you do has a reaction in the game that you'd be surprised. Oh, wait, they actually paid attention to that?
Yes, and there were a lot of people that when considering Disco Elysium and Outer Worlds came out at the same time, there were a lot of people that were playing Outer Worlds and they enjoyed Outer Worlds, but there was just something missing, and a lot of people.
Disco Elysium, and they said, "Oh, this is what I wanted."
Yes, there was a lot of people that claimed they found what they were looking for in Disco Elysium.
Yeah. See, I feel like that proves that, you know, you can have a good story game in the isometric thing, and not everything has to be a first person 3D game.
Here's the thing. I kind of sort of liked Planescape Torment. You know, because a lot of people call it the best book you'll ever play. But Disco Elysium isn't boring like Planescape Torment can be. There's more to it there. There's more there.
There's a little bit more agency.
I wouldn't say agency. I would say just the characters are more interesting. The story is easier to follow.
Regardless of the path you take in the world of Disco Elysium, the world's reactions to your choices are compelling and fun.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. In Planescape Torment, nothing changed except yourself, right? In this, the world changes around you. Although I did like in Planescape Torment, your actions dictated what your alignment was going to be. One game that came out this year, and I was shocked that it came out this year, is Slay the Spire. And that was my shit all year.
That was a fun game. I played that as well.
It's that, you know what, after playing it a couple of times, I said, fuck, I would pay right now for DLC. This game desperately needs more to it. This game needs add-ons. This game needs a lot of add-ons. I want to add on to this game. I want more characters, more abilities, more spells, more everything. You know, that's what I want from Slay the Spire. And I like roguelikes, and I like card games of this sort. It reminded me how much I loved Duel of the Planeswalkers by Microprose like 20 years ago. That was a Magic the Gathering RPG that was done in part with Sid Meier. And that was so fun, and this reminded me of that. And just trying to find the cards. The game is all about card combos, because you get that, you know, like with the middle guy, you know, the yellow guy who does poison. All these characters do different things. I mean, and you have to adjust because you may not get the poison stuff. You may only get the shiv stuff, and you have to figure out a way for your character to succeed just using shivs and card draws and all that stuff. But I'm telling you, if I kit him out as poison, and I get the ability to triple the poison, and I get the ability to add more poison, and the start of every turn, everybody gets poisoned. You know, I'm just running through the first three things like bonk, 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 you're dead, you're dead, you're dead, you're dead, you're dead. See ya. You know?
That is a very challenging game because you have to rely on a little bit of luck.
Yeah, you have to rely on what it gives you. It's sort of like FTL, because FTL, you could just die because the game was selfish. You know, it didn't give you what you needed, and you just get aced by the second thing. And the same thing can happen here. But yeah, Slay the Spire was a surprise hit for me. I only played it because it was free, you know, and when it comes off Game Pass, I'm just going to buy it. Oh, by the way, that's the story of the year, I think, in my eyes, for the most part, is that Game Passes have been a boon to indie game makers, because they say, you know what, people are trying our game and buying it when they're on Game Pass, because they found that people are willing to try games that they normally would not pay for, you know, and just say, it looks interesting. And it's expanding people's, you know, it's expanding people's scope, you know? I mean, there are certain game types that I would never play, but I tried on Game Pass, and it's like, oh, I really like this. Remember, I was talking about how burned out I was on Fallout, but, you know, I played State of Decay 2, and, you know, once the bugs were gone, it's like, I can't stop playing. I have to keep going on, you know? Even though there are annoying shit in there, which I was happy to find out that there's a State of Decay 3 being made, and it's going to be out in 2021, and I can't wait to play it.
Are you going to play it on day one, or are you going to play it
I'm going to get the Ultimate Edition so that I can get all the special things that you can't buy. They have to be part of the, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's the sort of game I'm willing to take a chance on. I don't pre-order as much as I used to.
That's interesting that you got to jump right in as opposed to waiting maybe 6 months while they patch out all the bugs.
Here's the thing. They're taking a long time on this. I'd be very surprised if there's bugs. This isn't like Crackdown 3 in which they just canceled it and started over again. Remember, Microsoft bought Undead Labs. And, oh, by the way, Undead Labs opened up a new studio.
Makes me think of the old saying, State of Decay 2, shame on you. State of Decay 3, shame on me.
Oh, you know, we really should talk about the new Xbox. It's finally been revealed.
Mm-hmm.
The Xbox Series X, which makes a lot of sense. Because they can't go with Xbox 2 or Xbox 3, you know. So Xbox Series X, and it looks like a tower, which is fine. It's not – the fact that the tower makes it look like it's bigger than it really is. You know, if you put the controller next to it, it's like twice the height of a controller or something like – or maybe 2.5 times the height of a controller. So it's small. And it can go on its side, which is fine. But you know what? I prefer it as a tower. It looks better as a tower. It takes up less space as a tower.
It is assuredly the boxiest looking Xbox that has ever been an Xbox.
Oh no, nothing can be boxier than the GameCube, because that was a cube.
Well, it's the boxiest Xbox. Yes, the GameCube is still the boxiest box of all boxes.
And you know, people are commenting, finally Microsoft is making a PC of their own.
Yep. Like that, and that was one of the things that I heard, like, in the discussion. So, like, I feel like Xbox should stop, like, clarifying what they mean by Xbox Series X, but, like, they did happen to mention during the whole debacle about what does that mean, is that Xbox Series X is sort of supposed to be a rebranding for the series, and it's going to be, like, the first of a few iterations, which makes it sound more like it's supposed to be, like, a PC.
It sounds like it's, like, Samsung Galaxy Series.
Yeah, that's the idea, is it's there's going to be, like, an Xbox Series X2 or Xbox Series X3. And I think that's odd, but also it makes sense, because if like we've been speculating for the last few years, PlayStation and Xbox are moving towards building, like, the home PC that is still a console, then – it makes sense that they'd also be planning on making different iterations of their home PC / console.
Yep. Anyways, so you know, I just don't know what my game of the year is, really.
It is hard for me to decide because I enjoyed many of the games that I played this year.
The problem is a lot of the games I played that I'm really enjoying are from a year ago or 2 years ago.
Yeah, I've been playing some older games as well. I played Final Fantasy.
What is it called? Trials of the Sky, I think? Number 3 came out.
Yeah, well, Cold Steel, yes. I have the first one. I haven't finished that one.
I thought you played the second one.
You're talking about Trials in the Sky, Heroes of Legend, or Legends of Heroes.
Yeah.
The game that just came out is Cold Steel, which is happening in a different part of the world, and it's a different trilogy. And I haven't completed the first one of that trilogy. I played the first two of the first trilogy, which was Trials in the Sky, Legends of Heroes, or something like that, which had... damn it, now I can't remember her name.
Well, it's not that important.
If you forgot it, it's not that important. So I guess it is. Damn it.
You know what? Okay, so my game of the year is probably not the game I thought it would be, but when I really think about it, it has to be Slay the Spire. It's the game I played the most. It's the game I played, you know, that I enjoyed the most. I mean, yeah, you know, there are games that are better looking, like Gears 5 and The Outer Worlds and all that stuff, you know. I mean, here's the thing. My game of the year would have been Void Bastards if they didn't screw it up so badly at the end. Because that was really, really fun, and the ending just ruined it. I never wanted to play it again.
Yeah. I mean, it really should be the game that stays with you throughout like, withstands the test of time, like something that you go back to, right?
Yeah,
and
so
in that
Slay
case...
I mean, Slay the Spire was the most fun, and unlike Void Bastards, in which after finishing it, it's sort of like I didn't want to touch it ever again, Slay the Spire just wants me wanting more. You know, and not Slay the Spire 2, I mean more for that game. You know, where the hell is the DLC, damn it? I'm going to look this up. Are they coming out with DLC for Slay the Spire? Because they should. I mean, a fourth character, at least. You know? No, they're just people who want it.
Yeah.
TJ, we know it's Resident Evil 2. You don't have to say anything more.
No, it's Sekiro. The Game Awards really? Got it right.
Really? You preferred Sekiro over Resident Evil 2?
I love Resident Evil 2. I think it's very extremely good. It's probably in my number 2. But game that was the game that I found to be the most beautiful, the game that I found to be the most compelling, one of my favorite boss battles, one of my favorite set pieces, a story that I really was interested in all the way through. Sekiro was enjoyable from every angle for me, and I think that there was no other. Like, I enjoyed Resident Evil 2. I played through it multiple times. But there was something about Sekiro that just, like, it's.
Okay, you know what? You just told me immediately what your most anticipated game for 2020 is now.
And it's Neo 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of them. My other one is Guilty Gear. There's going to be a new Guilty Gear in 2020, and so you can expect me to be gushing over that forevermore.
Yeah, but Neo 2 is going to be the game in which it's sort of like, well, it is Dark Souls, but, you know, it's going to be like we're going to be doing that shit. Just, I wonder how big the breasts are going to be in that game. Because it's a ninja.
You know, they were really reserved in their female characters in Neo 1, which was surprising. So who knows? Maybe they'll stretch their legs, explore their titties.
Scott, what was your best game of 2019?
I think I might have to. Yeah, I guess, is it okay to give it to Dragon's Quest XI, even though the original game came out like last year?
I'm going to say something. You know, you were really high on Luigi's Mansion 3 for a while there.
I really did. I have enjoyed it. It's just that Clem is a really annoying boss that I can't get past. And at least with Dragon's Quest, Dragon's Quest Builders 2 really improved on its gameplay and really did a good job just making a better game and being a good building game at the same time with a good story. And it's a sequel to Dragon's Quest 2, which is pretty awesome, I think.
There you go. Then it was Dragon Quest Builders 2. I mean, I'm not surprised because you were anticipating that thing for the past 2 years.
Yeah, I was.
I do got to say, like, I had Dragon's Quest Builders 2 in my top 10 games of the year as well. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to have a game that is very, 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 very much a ripoff of Minecraft, but also set itself apart so much to
I played part of it, and it never felt like Minecraft to me.
But it does take a lot of its inspiration from Minecraft.
I don't know about that. It felt like its own game. I mean, any more than Dragon Rancher, Monster Ranchers, never felt like Pokemon to me, because it had better systems than Pokemon did.
But that's what I'm saying, is that it takes those things, those references, and it, like, melds them enough into its own style to really stand on its own and become its own thing, and I think that's impressive.
Yeah.
Actually, my game of the year is Anthem. maybe not. I haven't played Anthem. It's like, That game is being treated like Ebola right now. I mean, I keep on hearing all these news about how they're fucking up Anthem even further. And it's, you know, I can't say I feel bad about it because, you know, I'd rather they were working on BioWare's working on something else than just some Destiny clone.
Yeah, and it seems like they don't care that. Like, it seems like they
care, but
not
they
as
care.
Much as. Yeah, like, let them work on Dragon Age 4. That's what they want to work on. Let them work on it. That's what they want to do. Yeah.
I mean, I like the story of Dragon Quest Inquisition. I hate the gameplay, but I like the story. I don't love it like I did Dragon Age Origins, or even Dragon Age 2 had a better game, had a better story. But, I mean, they finally told us what the deal with Morgan was, and what the deal was with Flemeth, and who she really was, and who a certain character was. And the funny thing is, I've been so immersed in the Dragon Age universe, it's sort of like I knew who these characters were before. You know, the lore, I was familiar with the lore, so it was more impactful for me. But, you know. I mean, anybody who knows who the Dread Wolf is in the Dragon Age thing. And there are certain revelations. I mean, this is not a spoiler. It's sort of like backstory stuff in which they said, yes, the gods were not gods. They were just powerful magicians and powerful elf magicians. And elves were never immortal. That's what they got wrong. They were just magisters and all this stuff, you know. So, I mean, that tells you nothing about just tells you about the backstory there, so it's not really that much of a spoiler. And you have to play the DLC to get all that anyway. Yeah. I mean, so what is the game you're looking forward to next year? I think you already answered that.
Great, Guilty Gear Strive.
And Neo 2. How about you, Scott?
Tunic and Animal Crossing New Horizon.
Tunic didn't come out yet.
No, it has not.
TJ, what's going on here? What happened, TJ?
I don't know. I don't know if they've even given
right
a release.
You know, Lucky is laughing at you now.
I don't even know that they've given a release date to Tunic, have they?
No, they haven't. They said it'll
Super
be ready
Lucky's
when it's
tale
ready.
Be more better and better every second now.
I don't know
TJ,
what's going
happened?
On.
You know, I have a theory. I do have a theory about what is happening with Tunic right now.
Well, here's the thing. Remember, Microsoft bought the developer. It's now just going to be Xbox One, Microsoft, and Mac OS now.
I mean, I'm just going to put this out there. Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening remake was announced, and do you really want to put an indie sort of derivative of
the thing? It's not going to be competing with Zelda because it's going to be on the Xbox One and Microsoft Windows.
Yes, but you don't want to put it right next to it because then people start making comparisons, and then you start getting
favorable comparisons.
It doesn't matter. You don't want to put it next to the.
They'll be like, it's a Zelda clone.
You have no faith in Andrew Schultz, do you?
No, it's that you don't want to put a game like Tunic next to Link's Awakening.
I think TJ's diplomatically trying to say people are assholes and going to be assholes if these games came out together or near each other.
Yeah, remember what happened to Titanfall 2, one of the best shooters of all time?
No,
it came out next.
That was just stupid because it was competing against one of its own publisher's games.
But it came out right next to Battlefield, and it came out right next to Call of Duty, and it just got buried in obscurity. You don't want to put Tunic next to a game like Link's Awakening Remake. It just doesn't make sense. And to that end, I would say that my theory – I would argue that they saw Link's Awakening, and they were like, we should wait a little bit. We should wait and give it time to cool, and then we should put out Tunic.
Hopefully before Breath of the Wild 2.
Yes.
Oh, no, they didn't. Microsoft didn't buy it. It's just going to be an Xbox One exclusive. But, yeah, I mean, whatever. You have no faith in it. It's an indie game anyway.
I have absolute faith in it, but, like, you...
You don't have any faith in it. It's able to hold its own.
If people have to make a decision between what they're going to buy in a weekend and it has to be between the indie version of Link's Awakening and Link's Awakening, they're probably going to buy Link's Awakening.
But you know what? Super Lucky's Tale won. It won, TJ. It won. It won so much that Microsoft released it on the Switch.
It hasn't won yet because Tunic hasn't come out yet, so you don't know. A bad game is bad forever, but a good game can take time as long as you sit on it forever.
Yeah, You are bashing Super Lucky's tail so much that fox took its tail and slapped you in the face with it.
It did no such thing. I have no interest in playing Super Lucky's tail, and it's for very specific reasons that I feel validated in. Other people can enjoy Super Lucky's
Super
tail.
Mario 64, I get it, because that's what Super Lucky's tail basically is.
There is Ori and the Will of the Wisps coming out next year. Final Fantasy VII Remake is coming out next year.
You know, everybody keeps on talking about Ori this and Ori that. I haven't played it. I have to play it and see why people are going on and on and gushing about it. I mean, I've seen the visuals.
It's a good Metroidvania.
It is an experience, and I think you have to play the whole thing, the music and the story, and just, I don't know, I guess you have to feel a connection to Ori as well, maybe. But it's just a beautiful game, and yeah, Metroidvania. But it's like, just, I feel like you're an organic kind of Metroid player, character, avatar, you know, versus being a whip slinger or space bounty hunter. You're this little forest creature that glows and shoots out little powers of light or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It is a fun, beautiful game, and there's just, I don't know, just like you're like fighting for nature and just trying to. It's just, there's something more visceral about it, I guess. I don't know. I just feel a stronger connection to this little Ori thing than some of the other Metroid.
Yeah, but Yahtzee complained it gave him Misery Blue Balls.
Misery Blue Balls. Yeah, I can understand that.
You know, this is a long podcast. We've been talking for almost 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Again, we love talking about the games of this year. So, getting back to the original question, was this year a success? And
yes.
It's hard to say. Because a lot of the games that were supposed to be the games just flopped, or they came out. People said, "Oh, that's good," and then they forgot about it.
I would say that yes, it was a successful year, and it's not even hard for me to say that because there were so many good ones that just like people like there was a consistently good year. Like it didn't feel
okay,
like there
you
was
know what?
Dead
Here's
months.
The thing. It was not a good year for AAA titles.
I disagree.
It wasn't. It was the year of AA titles. Games
it was
that
definitely
weren't
a year
me,
for Switch.
But what?
It was definitely a good year for Switch.
Well, that's because everybody was porting stuff to it.
it had its own good stuff, too.
Yeah, like the Dragon's Quest Builders and Luigi's Mansion 3.
Dragon's
and
Builders was on PS4, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Luigi's Mansion 3, Link's Awakening. Link's Awakening, Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of good games on there, and then of course the Virtual Console.
That was the Apple game that I was thinking of. What the Golf?
Oh yeah, What the Golf is good too. But yeah, even throughout the rest of the year, you had like Resident Evil 2. You had you may not like it, but Devil May Cry 5 was a success.
If you say so.
It was a success. That's not even like debatable. It was a success. You might hate it, but it was successful.
There's also a lot of ports that came out, or not even ports, but remasters. I mean, you had Age of Empires 2 coming out again. You had Catherine coming out again. Did anybody was there calls for Catherine again?
Yes.
No.
I hate
I guess
the main
somebody
character
did.
Of that thing. He's such a spaz. He's just spaz. I mean, hey, listen, guy, here are three words that you should say. Four words. I have a girlfriend.
Yeah. No, I would argue, though, that 2019, like, there wasn't a period of the year where I felt like I didn't have anything interesting to play. It was a pretty stacked year between the likes of The Outer Worlds, the Star Wars game.
You
like,
know what? Here's the thing. For me, usually in a year, I'm playing a lot of stuff. But this year, I found myself latching on to one game for long stretches, which is weird for me. Usually, I'm going to play this, and I'm going to play this, and I'm going to play – no. This year, it's sort of like I'm playing nothing but Slay the Spire. I'm playing nothing but State of Decay 2. You know, if there's a major release, I'll say, okay, that's fine. Like, Gears 5 was great, but I don't play it.
Right.
And, like, I mean, I will say it might not be your year, and there are years like that.
It's not my year. It's just that I latched onto fewer games this year.
Sure.
I mean, I could say, oh, I know I'm going to hate Borderlands 3. Fuck it. What gives me hope is that the user score for Borderlands 3 was pretty low. So it wasn't just me, you know. It was other people are saying, okay, enough. And you know what? At some point, I'm going to have to try Yakuza. You know, everybody talks about Yakuza. It's on PC now. It's coming to Xbox now. You know, and it's supposed to be everything that Shenmue it wants to be.
Final Fantasy XIV, the MMO, also had a pretty breakout year with its new expansion.
Yeah.
Shadowbringers. I feel like there was a good portion of this year where a lot of my friends were talking about, like,
talk about World of Warcraft Classic.
Is there much to say? It kind of just, like, came out and then went away.
Yeah, actually, and it didn't go away, but there's a lot of complaints about it, and the entire Blizzard thing sort of soured people on it, too, because it came out around the same time as the banning of that guy, and it's sort of like it put a pall on everything Blizzard's been doing.
They have a lot of work to do to earn some to earn their reputation back in 2020.
Diablo 4, even though they admitted they hadn't even started the damn game yet, so you know why they announced Diablo 4. They had no intention of making Diablo 4, but guess what? We need to look at this Diablo 4. Look at it. It's going to come out in 4 years, just like that game Project Phoenix. When is it supposed to come out? When's Project Phoenix still supposed to come out? It's not vaporware. It's still... What year is Project Phoenix supposed to come out now?
I haven't looked, but I don't think there's even a release date. It's just whatever.
It's just ridiculous.
So glad I didn't back that. There's so many people that want their money back. I think everybody wants their money back.
The guy did Project... He announced Project Phoenix in 2013. Raised $1 million.
Jesus.
And then said, you know what, I'm going to start a new company. I'm going to do another Kickstarter for Tiny Metal.
This is so messed up. It's just... Wow.
It's just... You know what, here's the thing. When you have a game, a video game... Make sure it's half done before you do a Kickstarter project on it. I mean, that was the problem with Mighty No. 9, you know? They hadn't started work on Mighty No. 9 when they did a Kickstarter for it. And that's the problem with Broken Age, too. Wow. With Broken Age, you know, Tim Schafer just wanted to do a documentary about making a game. That was the entire point of it. He said that, like, 2/3 of the money would go towards the documentary, but when he made a couple $1 million, like, oh, I better make a good game, he made the first half of Broken Age, he had to do early access to raise money for the second half of Broken Age.
I'm happy that that eventually paid off, though. I enjoyed where Broken Age went.
I liked Broken Age. You know, I liked it. I mean, he had to hire Jack Black just to rescue it.
Yeah, there's a good amount of games coming out next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. March and April are going to be insane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, people are really looking forward to Cyberpunk 2077, but my shit, you already know what my shit is going to be. Well, aside from Halo Infinite, but definitely going to be Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. That's the game I really... And that's the reason why I'm even considering buying a visual novel game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I would never buy a visual novel game, but hey, look, it's Vampire the Masquerade. It's Coteries of New York. I gotta try that. But, just quickly checking.
Yeah,
games that I'm really looking forward to. I mean, I don't give a shit about Death Stranding.
Oh, definitely looking forward to Minecraft Dungeons, and there's also Bravely Default 2 coming out.
Yeah.
So there's some good games.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people are excited that, you know, it's coming out. It's not a new game, but Warcraft 3 Reforged is coming out in January.
Yes.
Yeah, I just saw that.
I mean, it's not Warcraft 4, but it's something.
I think there's too much money coming from World of Warcraft that they're. I mean, they could do. I guess it would be hard to, because you have all your story is in the World of Warcraft, and if you had Warcraft 4, how would you set that apart from the MMO?
Yeah, but here's the thing: the publishers all hate TJ. They hate him with a white hot passion.
What?
Because what? Nioh 2 comes out on the 13th of March, and Doom Eternal comes out on the 20th of March.
Cyberpunk 2020 also comes out around that time. Final
yeah,
Fantasy
I don't
VII
think
Remake also comes
out. Not coming out in April. No, it's going to be delayed till December. You watch.
I don't
no
know.
No fucking way it's coming out in April 2020.
Okay, well, going off of what the schedule is as it is right now, it's coming out in April. Final Fantasy VII Remake is also coming out around that time. Resident Evil 3 is coming out around that time.
Hey, Scott, do you care about Wasteland 3?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, that's coming out in May. I was just wondering. I think I backed it.
There's so many games. So many games in so short a time.
You know, yeah. Games. You know, and here's the thing. I did not know I wanted it until they announced it, and that's Gears Tactics. Because guess what? Gears plus XCOM.
Yes, it does look good.
Finally, the cover-based shooting has a purpose, a real purpose. You know what game's going to come out and fall flat on its face, right? And that's Marvel's Avengers. I cannot see that being a success. I see it as just being dead on arrival. That's going to die really quickly. No one cares. No one cares.
Yeah, it also just doesn't look great. Like, I don't know.
But Resident Evil 3, April 3rd.
Which is going to be fun. I'm really interested to play Project Resistance, too.
Now, here's the thing. You said that... Which one was your favorite of the Resident Evils? Number 3, you said? Because it had Nemesis, or...?
3 is one of my all-time faves, because not only the persistent threat of Nemesis, but just like how much of Raccoon City it explored during the actual outbreak itself.
Yeah, I think in 2, you're just in the police station, for the most part.
Resident Evil 2, you arrive kind of in the fallout of everything. Resident Evil 3 is set in the middle of the outbreak. Like Resident Evil 2, you kind of arrive in a graveyard. Resident Evil 3, you are playing as the graveyard is being filled. So, I think it's going to be really, really good. I'm really interested to see how they take those characters in that story and adapt it. Like, I'm so happy to see what they've done so far. And even though it's so close to Resident Evil 2, I'm really excited to see how they handle it.
And I know, I'm guessing that Scott is interested in Trials of Mana.
Oh, yes, that does look nice. Anything that's a JRPG.
So, here's a question for you, TJ. Do you give any shits about Half-Life Alyx?
I would, except for the fact that, like, that seems like a game where you need a top-of-the-line headset. It doesn't seem like the kind of game that's going to work on just any old VR headset. I
don't know. I mean, Valve is it's just a cul-de-sac in the story of Half-Life, you know? People want Half-Life 3, or they're going to give us a moment in Alyx's life. Who cares?
I do. Like, I want to see what that story looks like.
I think it's before her father died, even. I think it's even before she meets Gordon.
It is. It is in the time period when they were...
Why the fuck do I give a shit? I don't care.
No. Yeah, okay, but I do.
Okay, you can care. Go ahead.
It's the time period of Alyx and her father starting the resistance as the Combine is creating that city. City 17 or whatever. And I'm interested to see what they do with that, because I know it's going to end up on the same beats that, like, you know where it ends up. You know it ends at Half-Life 2 and, like, all that jazz and whatever. But, like, it also just looks like a legitimately fun VR game.
By the way, I almost forgot. And this is news that we could have talked about. A long time ago, actually, because this is not new news, but are you looking forward to Doom 64? Because that's the game that's being, I think, bundled with Doom Eternal.
Nah, I don't care.
Okay. Because I know a lot of people are excited about that.
Because
here's the thing. Doom, for those who don't know, Doom 64 is Doom but plus-plus with more content in it.
I think it's aged quite a bit. Like, I don't know if I care enough for how much time has passed since then. I feel like it would feel dated and not very fun at this point. Yeah. Like, if they were going to do something like that, you know what I would like to see? If they were going to make another Unreal Tournament, I wouldn't mind if they bundled the original Unreal Tournament with that, because that is...
Oh, yeah, and I played the shit out of Unreal Tournament and Unreal Tournament Game of the Year Edition. I used Unreal Ed, and I made levels for that thing. And I loved making the path notes for the AI.
I don't think Epic is going to go back to Unreal Tournament anytime soon, just because Fortnite is taking up all their time and money. But,
Cast iron dildo, fuck it.
But if they ever did go back to Unreal Tournament, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
I don't know, because the last time they did Unreal Tournament was completely broken, and I did not enjoy it. Because the entire thing with me in Unreal Tournament was playing single player against bots. That was the most fun for me. And, you know, before we go, I just want to say, for those of you, Two Point Hospital is coming on console in February, you're in for a treat. If you ever love Theme Hospital, that's basically what this is. Have you played Two Point Hospital?
I have not, but it's one of those things that I'm going to wait until it's down in price. That's one of those ones, and then the other one is Jurassic World Evolution. I really want to play both those things.
Oh, it's free on Game Pass. they also are bringing back Oddworld Stranger's Wrath HD.
Yes, which I haven't seen anything since they posted the original announcement video. It was like a cinematic trailer.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, we know it's Neo and Doom for you.
It's Guilty Gear Strive and Guilty Gear Strive and also Guilty Gear Strive. I care more about Guilty Gear Strive and how that game is going. That if Neo 2 is okay, it will not make or break my year. If Guilty Gear Strive is
How Neo 2 is going to be bad.
But like my entire year could hinge on Guilty Gear Strive. If that game is awesome.
What are you talking about?
If that game sucks, it will break my 2020.
Well,
if that game,
let me ask you
great.
A question. Have you ever known any Arc Systems games to ever out and out suck?
I've played one or two. But
well, their percentage is pretty high. I mean,
yes, I have faith in them. I do have faith in them. But that is to say, my most anticipated game, the game that will make and break my break my 2020 is absolutely Guilty Gear Strive.
Now you make me perversely want to see it be delayed or suck just to see how much you suffer.
Joke's on you. They haven't even given an announce date yet.
It's supposed to be in April.
Not that I know of.
Really? Because I can send you the news item about that. Oh, no, they didn't. Never mind. I was looking at something else.
Yeah, they don't have a date on it yet. And
they
I think
they're... 2020.
I get the feeling that they're going to probably... I don't think they're going to try to shove it out before Evo next year, but I wouldn't also be surprised.
Oh, shit, I forgot all about it. And the game that made everybody wet their pants, for those who are into that sort of game, was Microsoft Flight Simulator. Everybody who's even remotely interested in flight simulators were just knocked out.
Yeah. It does look gorgeous.
And they're using, not Google Maps, but a different map thing that's going to make it as the baseline for the world that you can fly in. So, yeah, I mean, everybody's... Oh, and of course, Psychonauts 2. I mean, I backed that shit for $860. So, it better be good. And also, of course, Kerbal Space Program 2, which actually, you know, I know a lot of people who loved Kerbal Space Program, but what they're doing with 2... expanding it to the point in which people were just stunned. And also 12 minutes. I mean, the trailer really got me. It made me want to see what's going on with that game. You know 12 minutes, right?
Yes.
For those who don't know, it's the game in which it's a top-down view and keep going through all these time loops.
Yes. And it's like you keep the information from the time loops when you start the new one. So it's interesting how that's – because it seems like it's also voiced.
Yeah, it's voiced, yes.
So, like the trailer that they showed, you're in an apartment and there's someone at the door that you're convinced is going to murder your, I think, spouse or whoever.
Yeah. You're in trouble and they murder you and your spouse, or they just murder your spouse, or whatever whatever the situation you've set up, you know, and the scene plays out. I am looking forward to Dark Pictures Anthology Little Hope. I mean, I enjoyed Until Dawn Part 2, otherwise known as Man of Medan. I did not realize I was playing Until Dawn until I saw the same developer and said, oh, wait a minute. Then I looked at the gameplay from Until Dawn and I said, holy shit, okay. I played Until Dawn 2 without realizing it. I know a lot of people are really excited about Crusader Kings 3. Because Crusader Kings 2, you're just playing. Oh, by the way, I did see Sniper Elite at PAX Unplugged. I was thoroughly unimpressed. It's just a tile game. But I saw Crusader Kings 2, the board game, and it took every bit of self-control not to pick it up right there and then. It looks really, really interesting, but I don't know how often I'd be able to play it.
They finally they're finally talking about making Crusader Kings 3, and it looks
I just said that.
I know, that's what I'm thinking is like I'm talking about like the developer diaries that I've read or listened to. It's interesting what they're talking about doing because they're talking about trying to make a game that will cater to old fans but also bring in new ones, and that always ends up at, that always builds a situation or an expectation where this could be like really, really good, or it could be shitty and please no one.
Then you have System Shock coming out, and everybody's played the demo. I have not deliberately because I backed it, so I do not want to ruin it for me. I want to play the complete game. I'm not going to play a demo. I'm not going to play a thing. I want the full game. Thank you very much. So
I didn't get a chance to play the System Shock demo. I actually was curious if you would, but I guess you're waiting for the full thing.
Yep, and System Shock 3 is a thing. We'll see how that goes. I am nervous about it. That can be either great or a complete and utter disaster. Also, you know, I'm like everybody else. I want to see what Halo Infinite is. And the only question is, am I going to get an Xbox Series X? And I think, I don't know, because you don't need an Xbox Series X. See, that's the thing, is that this is going to be like a cell phone upgrade. You know?
I mean, it's still going to be a substantial step over Xbox One X.
Yeah, but everything that, you know, it's sort of like backward and forward compatibility. Halo Infinite will run on Xbox One X. I heard that it may be too powerful for the Xbox One. And they'll have to really bring it back. You know? Because the difference between that, it's like the difference between the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 4 Pro. I almost forgot. You're looking forward to Hades, right?
I do. I am looking forward to it. I'm waiting for it to release on consoles so I can play it with Sam.
Okay. It looked interesting when I saw it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's another game from Supergiant and the folks behind Transistor and Pyre and I forget what the first one was, but every Supergiant game has been good so far. So, I'm hearing that Hades is good too. So I really want to get in there.
You know what? I just realized I know another game that's probably up your shit too. You know, Sucker Punch is coming out with Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, that one does look good. It looks very cinematic. It looks very interesting. I haven't played the Infamous games. And I don't know if it's going to be anything like them at all. It doesn't look like it.
No, it doesn't look like one at all. It looks more like a Dark Souls game, really.
Right. But that is to say, I haven't played like really much of Sucker Punch's library, so I don't know exactly what to expect when I look at their games. But it does look beautiful. So
that reminds me, Ninja Theory announced they're coming out with Hellblade 2.
Yes.
And people were sort of deflated when they showed off Bleeding Edge. Like, oh, it's just Overwatch with a lot more melee. So I think they were like relieved. Oh, okay, they're making a not a real game, but a narrative game. Because I'm not one of them, but there were people who liked Heavenly Sword. And people loved Hellblade. So, getting back to her, and they're calling it Senua's Saga, which means they're going to be drawing out her story for a bit.
Yeah.
Not just for this game, but for the foreseeable future. So, anyways. They're actually remaking Destroy All Humans.
Yes, and it looks good.
And, of course, the third, there's another Legend of Hero Trails game that's coming out in September 2020. Are you looking forward to that one? Oh, wait. Which ones have you completed, though, Scott?
The Legend of Heroes first game and second story. And I have played the third one, haven't completed it yet. And I got the Cold Steel first game, but I haven't finished that one. So those are the ones that I've played. So those are like four
games. I know,
but
this is a new Trails game, though. So it's like you're on and on about the story for that game.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, this guy for.
There's no. It's just been announced. There's no. There's nothing else about it. Just it's an untitled Trails game.
Ah. Okay. Yeah. I see it. Spring 2020. I don't know. I guess it would be a new story.
Here's a question. Is it going to be sort of like a spin-off, or is it actually going to continue from the story of number 3?
Both. Because I remember, like, when I finished the second game of Legends of Heroes, they explicitly, the characters said, oh, it'll be new adventures for other people to continue on the fight or whatever. And so the next Trials in the Sky will be new characters, same world, maybe in a different region, maybe same region, different time frame, like a couple of years later or something like that. I'm just looking.
We know you'll be on it
definitely.
Comes out. So anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. Yeah, we made up for last week by a thing and a half. We've been on this thing for almost 3 hours. But you know what? 2019, you gotta talk about it. Gotta wrap it up. And I think we did that. And I'm pretty sure we forgot one or two games. Anyways, you can look for me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
I am Matt Alphouchard.
And we will see you next week, and it'll be a new year.
Happy gaming, everyone, in the new year.
Have fun, play games, have a happy new year, y'all.
Goodbye, 2019, you piece of shit. Talking about the year in video games, I just mean the year. Hopefully 2020 will be a lot better. Make me not want to hide my eyes every time I watch the news.
Well, play games, don't watch the news.
Just escapist fantasy. Just hide yourself from the real world. Anyways, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.